by almost everybody, including most definitely Vladimir Putin, to take mere days. It was supposed to be over, not by Christmas, as the saying usually goes, but by the end of the weekend. That was an epic miscalculation. I wonder how much you know, or how much you think you know. I don't know how much I know about how well or how poorly Ukraine is faring in this David and Goliath battle, but I think we can fairly say a hell of a lot better than anybody predicted or expected. But one more warning that we're already in World War III just landed.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, the Education Secretary has insisted on LBC that changes to the special educational needs system in England will deliver better life chances for children. £4 billion proposals outlined yesterday included an overhaul to children's education, health and care plans. By 2035, the support packages will be reserved only for young people with the most complex needs. But speaking on LBC's Call the Cabinet this morning, Bridget Phillipson stressed that no child will lose support.
All children will have an individual support plan. That will mean more children than right now who the only way to get that support is through an education, health and care plan. Where we make that transition from primary to secondary, so that's children who are currently in year two, who in 2029-30 will be starting that transition process to secondary school. Of the children right now who currently have an education, health and care plan, we estimate that one in eight will move on to an individual support plan rather than being in the EHCP process.
The Education Secretary also told LBC that she is aware of the anger that the student loan system is causing. Bridget Phillipson says she will continue to review it. Peter Mandelson has been released on bail, returning to his home in North London overnight. He was arrested yesterday on suspicion of misconduct in public office after the release of the latest Jeffrey Epstein files. The former Labour minister denies wrongdoing. Legal commentator Joshua Rosenberg says investigations are likely to be long and complex.
This sort of case depends on a paper trail, although when we say paper, we mean electronic records. And the question really is whether the electronic records still exist, whether they've been preserved. So what the police are going to have to do is not just look through Peter Mandelson's computers to see if there are any emails from, you know, nearly 20 years ago, but also look at public records, departmental records, ministerial records.
Britain has announced further sanctions against Russia, the largest since the start of the invasion of Ukraine 4 years ago today. They're aimed at cutting off critical oil revenues for Moscow. It's emerged some GPs yet to prescribe weight loss jabs. That's despite a mass rollout on the NHS in England starting last summer. The government's announced new financial incentives to encourage doctors to recommend the drugs to patients who need them. And a filmmaker is quitting as a BAFTA judge over the Academy's handling of a racist slur at Sunday's Film Awards. Jonty Richardson says he feels compelled to withdraw. The Tourette's campaigner John Davidson shouted the slur during a presentation by black actors Michael B. Jordan and Delroy Lindo. BAFTA has apologised to them. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 21 at 10,663. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.14. LBC weather, dry and mild with sunny spells for large parts of England. Some rain for the west of Scotland and Northern Ireland, a high of 15 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
And now your travel news. It's starting to look a bit congested on the A4872 southbound. We're hearing reports people are slowing down to look at the Volkswagen Transporter sales event. Apparently you can get £1,500 off any new Transporter. That's any variant, any trim, and any colour until the 31st of March. Now that's a deal worth queuing for. Search VW Transporter offers. UK retail customers 18 plus. Discount applies to price of all new Transporters ordered by 31st of March and delivered by 30th of June.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Good morning. It's 4 minutes after 10. And I suppose whatever the phenomenon that we are about to examine is precisely, we are on the side of the guilty, I think, rather than the innocent. Because if we're to ask questions about why the support for or interest in Ukraine has waned. So, well, I'm not sure support has, but interest in Ukraine's battle against Russia has waned so markedly in the 4 years since it started. Then the media will obviously be part of the answer to that question. You think back to Brexit, right? Not in a critical way yet. Don't send me the messages complaining that I keep reminding you how stupid you were in 2016. But have we ever felt as unified as a country and as a continent as we did in the immediate aftermath of Putin's invasion of Ukraine? You think back to the consensus in Parliament. Nigel Farage, of course, wasn't in Parliament at the time, and he continues to consider Vladimir Putin to be the most admirable politician on the planet, to the point, I suppose, where his former crony, who was taking bribes from the Kremlin, or at least from a Kremlin stooge to spout Kremlin propaganda in the European Parliament, probably didn't realise that that he was going against party policy at the time. But I mean, him exempted, everybody was pretty clear about the illegality and the unacceptability of what Putin did. The ludicrous argument that somehow it had been provoked or that NATO was to blame, although popularised by Donald Trump. I don't know whether Donald Trump is taking bribes from Kremlin stooges to spout propaganda lines from the Kremlin. I don't know whether any of the people who spout propaganda lines from the Kremlin, and unlike Nathan Gill, haven't been convicted of any crimes, are secretly in receipt of kickbacks or blackmail. I don't know. But apart from absolute idiots or traitors, the idea that the invasion of Ukraine was somehow provoked by NATO or by Ukrainians is palpably obscene, any more than the invasion of Poland by Adolf Hitler was provoked by Poles. So we know that. But what we don't have much recent experience of is consensus. The fact that everybody agreed with that, even Boris Johnson, in the spirit of stopped clocks since time immemorial, and of course despite his well-documented partying with KGB spies or a KGB spy and his family, and slipping the net of his own security officers in order to go and spend an undocumented weekend in the company of said KGB spy, even Boris Johnson managed to say and do all the right things with regard to Ukraine, although almost certainly by accident, given that everything he ever did was motivated entirely by self-interest. What would be best for me in this current scenario? I think backing Volodymyr Zelensky and Ukraine will be best for me, Boris Johnson, in this current scenario. But perhaps that's an unfair quibble. Let's look instead at the fact that everybody was on the same side. I can't remember. Is there anything else like that in the last 10 years, where we were all on the same side? You sort of go back further and look at military interventions in the Middle East. You have extraordinary disagreement and dispute. Probably the people opposed to the Second Gulf War have been vindicated rather more by history than the people who were in favour of it. So apart from the various traitors and shysters who were talking about poking the Russian bear and either wittingly or unwittingly operating a propaganda arm for Vladimir Putin's Kremlin, we were all more or less in agreement on this. And then you had that extraordinary experience of welcoming refugees, something that is so entirely at odds with the current flavour of this country. And yes, I know that they were white and European refugees, but they were still refugees and therefore subject to all of the same criticisms that other refugees would be subjected to. They, you know, could have signed on for benefits. They were taking our jobs. They were doing all the things that refugees have been accused of doing since time immemorial. Go back to the 1930s, and it was Jews, Russian Jews in particular, that the Daily Mail was encouraging British people to despise and reject. But the Ukrainians didn't suffer from any of that. The Ukrainian refugee project, albeit that it was largely funded and footed by the public as opposed to the government, was a glorious success. We probably all know people who invited Ukrainian refugees into their home with largely positive results. So the country was more or less united in its outlook. The welcome mat was rolled out for refugees when you think that it was just a few, 2 years before somebody was turned into a folk hero by Nigel Farage for suggesting that we should be burning refugees to death in their own beds. 2 years before that, we were rolling out the welcome mat for all of the Ukrainian refugees. And I can't remember anything that spoke of similar unity or consensus in recent memory. Which brings us to today. This is going to shock you, I think, unless you, for reasons that remain elusive, spend as much time following the news as I do. So, story number one from earlier in the week. Zelensky tells BBC Putin has started World War III and must be stopped. So, I like my 1930s parallels. If you're a historian, you're probably going to tell me why I need to get rid of them sharpish. What would the equivalent have been of that? I mean, the person in this country who was sounding the alarm bell most vociferously about Adolf Hitler was Winston Churchill, who I think we can all agree turned out to be on the right side of history on that question, at least. I don't know what the British equivalent would be of a politician really banging the drum about the threat that Russia poses. But it's not just the leader of Ukraine that uses language like World War III, of course. Others do as well. Another story, story number two, General Sir Rowley Walker is the British Army chief. The head of the British Army has chosen the fourth anniversary of Moscow's illegal invasion of Ukraine to warn us that Russia was building bigger and more lethal armed forces to prepare for a wider war. Chief of the General Staff said he could see no evidence of the Kremlin scaling back its ambitions. So, listen, what do you know what the biggest story on the and I get this, it's not in any way a criticism of anybody, but, and I've forgotten what it was, but there's quite a trivial story. It's so much easier to excite us and intrigue us with trivia or with simplistic analysis of sometimes complicated situations than it is to actually get our heads around the really, really big stuff. That's answer number one to the question that we're heading towards. We struggle to get our heads around the really, really big stuff because it's so big. I probably cite that Leonardo DiCaprio film Don't Look Up too often, but it's such a perfect allegory. Isn't it? It's such a beautiful, poetic allegory that the threat that is on our horizon is so acute and we're so baffled by what we can do to resist it that we will just behave as if it is not there. Most obviously with climate change. Possibly, probably, definitely. I don't know. Multiple choice. A, B or C. Possibly, probably or definitely. Go on, tick a box. I don't know what would be in box four marked other. But possibly, probably, definitely Russia. Should be in the same category as well. A massive threat on our very horizon that we are completely ignoring. Because that's story number two. So the Ukrainian leader, using the phrase, going for the button, pressing the button, Putin has started World War III and must be stopped. Well, he would say that, wouldn't he? You might possibly conclude. But the head of the British Army, warning that Russia is building bigger and more lethal armed forces to prepare for a wider war. And then the third story, well, actually there's four. The third story you heard alluded to in Dominic's news bulletin a moment ago. This is a sanctions package against Russia 4 years after that full-scale invasion, largely as a consequence, if I've understood this story correctly, of an IT blunder that revealed an apparent smuggling ring that has moved at least $90 billion of Russian oil and is playing a central role in funding the Kremlin's war in Ukraine. And it wasn't MI6 that did this, it was the Financial Times, the doyen of British newspapers at the moment. I mean, knocking everybody else into a cocked hat. 48 seemingly independent companies identified by the FT working from different physical addresses that appear to be operating together to disguise the origin of Russian oil. And it failed, or rather it broke this story, because they all share a single private email server. As a consequence of this investigation by the Financial Times, the government has announced, and this is where I think I followed the story correctly, nearly 300 new sanctions against key suppliers of military equipment fueling war efforts and people colluding in this export of Russian oil. So that's story number three. complicated, but evidence of the scale of the problem. Story number four is the maddest one of all. This is where you need George Smiley or River Cartwright on the case, because Russian spies have turned properties across Western Europe into a network of Trojan horses designed to unleash coordinated sabotage campaigns, intelligence officials have warned today. This is the so-called hybrid war on the West, and it sees Russian units suspected of purchasing, wait for it, sensitive real estate close to military and civilian sites in at least a dozen European nations. The new head of MI6 used her first speech in charge to warn Britain is now operating in a space between peace and war. She said Russia is testing us in the grey zone with tactics that are just below the threshold of war. So, sit down, or pull up a chair, or I mean, not if you're driving, but just pause with me for a moment to reflect upon those three and a half stories. Story number one, Zelensky says it's already World War III and he's got to be stopped. Story number two, the head of the British Army says we're on a collision course with Russia and they are preparing for more, or war, whatever you prefer. Story number three, they are buying up properties in countries like ours in order to quite probably put in place capability to launch sabotage campaigns in a so-called hybrid war. How loud do those voices have to be to shake you or me away from whatever else we're doing this morning? What was I doing this morning? I was complaining that I'd forgotten to put honey in my overnight oats and wondering what I might be able to... Don't at me, don't text me on what I might be able to use as a substitute. I've gone with brown sugar. I'll report back later. What were you doing this morning? Worried getting the kids back to school after half term, wondering about A-levels if they're in that age zone, looking at the announcement that the government made about special educational needs yesterday and wondering how they're going to affect you. I don't know, possibly wondering how an unelected man can be describing himself as shadow home secretary while waltzing around the country with much of the UK media following him. I don't know what you were doing this morning. Busy cleaning the car? I don't know what you were doing this morning, but the head of the army and the head of MI6 have joined the head of Ukraine in warning us that we are either embarked upon or upon the brink of World War III. I'll say that again. The head of the army, the head of MI6 and our ally in Ukraine have warned us that we are either embarked upon or on the brink of World War III, war with Russia. They have broken the glass, but in your house, the bell ain't ringing. And I'd like today to try to work out why. Why is the bell not... I mean, if I'd said to you 10 years ago, what planets would have to align for us to panic, for us to embark upon a programme of collective national panic, for us to call upon governments to give armies whatever it is they think they need to resist this. One of the reasons why we can't help Ukraine as much as we might is because the attempts by the EU to do so are being sabotaged by Hungary, by the authoritarian regime in Hungary. No prizes for guessing which British political party is constantly cozying up to the authoritarian regime in Hungary. But on this occasion, I don't think the fraudsters, shysters and traitors that populate that outfit are responsible for the failure of these bells to ring. I think it's on us. And by that, I don't mean the media. The media can only do so much. The Daily Telegraph, and how often have I told you that the Daily Telegraph has become a sort of bottle of bin juice when it comes to their comment pages or when it comes to much of their domestic journalism. Their foreign journalism is absolutely exceptional on this front. It is to the Telegraph that you should turn this morning to read Adrian Blomfield reporting from Finland on the Kremlin operatives acquiring a network of sites designed to launch sabotage campaigns. It is to the splendidly monikered Memphis Barker, their senior foreign correspondent, that you should turn to read a rather optimistic analysis of why the Ukrainian front line is holding up and people on it hold a rather rosier view of their prospects. It is to the Financial Times that you must turn to find out about the extraordinary investigation into an email blunder that has exposed $90 billion worth of Russian oil being smuggled out of the country. And it is quite probably to countries like Finland and Estonia and Poland that you should turn at least an ear to work out why the bells there are ringing loud. ringing extremely loud. But these three men have broken the glass in Britain and the alarm bells are not ringing. And I don't... Well, I want you to tell me why. 0345 6060 973. The head of the army, the head of MI6, and the head of Ukraine. Using words like collision course or World War III or similar to describe the situation in which this country finds itself. This country, not warning about the threat to allies, not warning about the threat to Europe, this country finds itself in a situation worthy of descriptions like collision course, head of the army, World War III, head of Ukraine, and sabotage camp, hybrid war, threshold of war. There you go, that's the hat trick. Threshold of war, head of the MI6. Collision course, head of the army, World War III, head of Ukraine. Why are our bells not ringing more loudly? 0345 6060 973. Or, if they are, why can't we hear them? Your answers, please. Because it's quite important, don't you think?
LBC.
This is 40-year-old Kathy, mother of two and self-confessed telly addict.
Oh, look at you. That's brilliant. Well done.
This is also Kathy, working as part of a team to keep things calm at her local prison.
Come on. Listen, speak to me.
And helping someone's son write his first letter home in 8 months.
Well done. You should be really proud.
Thank you, miss.
An extraordinary job done by someone like you. Search prison jobs now.
Lost World Play Barn, Dragon Castle Children's Farm, Jumping Pillows, Wallabies, Froggy Soft Play. Tommy Tractor Play Barn, Quadrapillar Rowing Boats, Owl Displays, Meerkats, Honey Pot Bears. And four giant slides on the brand new Wave Runner 2. Let's plunge!
What's next, Dad?
Cannon Arena Lemurs, Jungle Kingdom Go-Karts, Trampolines, Magical Wood and Cafes.
Nutcatch Adventure Park.
The sun goes on and on and on and on.
Book now at nutcatch.com.
Listeners, we interrupt the airwaves to share an incredible discovery. The reason why Britain hasn't been so great of late is because the country hasn't been eating enough Weetabix. We must get to work in rebuilding Great Britain, Bix by Bix. By delivering Weetabix to whoever plans the traffic diversions, to delivery drivers who can't seem to find your house,
and people who don't stack the dishwasher properly.
To Britain, we must say, have you had your Weetabix?
Donations to British Heart Foundation fund scientific research that can help save lives. People like Joe, who's pitching his next big business plan. Maria, who's sending out her wedding invitations. And Jack, who's just being a teenager again. Because when you donate, you fund more than just science. You help save lives. British Heart Foundation funds research that aims to cure inherited heart muscle diseases. But our work is not done. Donate now at bhf.org.uk and keep us beating.
This is LBC. Message James O'Brien on WhatsApp now on 0345 6060 973.
22 minutes after 10. And another story for which I thank Nathan for bringing it to my attention. This really has gone under the radar. Published in November of last year, an investigation into how Russia has used migrants strategically, particularly in the context of Norway and Finland, to foment discontent, if you like, trying to damage bilateral relations. Semi-structured interviews and empirical study. Cambridge University identifies several potential Russian goals tied to its use of migration, including the restoration of bilateral relations to the levels before Russia's 2014 invasion of Ukraine. So, again, it's probably a bit of a coincidence that the people screaming loudest about migration into this country are also the people most likely to be, we have discovered, either in thrall to the Kremlin or effectively on the Kremlin payroll. But again, unless you can persuade me otherwise, I don't think that's part of the answer to the question I'm asking today, which is why when people as important as this break the glass, the bell don't ring. Break glass in case of emergency, they have done so. The head of MI6, the head of the army, the head of Ukraine. Why can't we hear it? Why aren't we responding with more urgency? Nick's in Manchester. Nick, what would you like to say?
Hi, James. First time calling in, so thanks
Welcome.
For having me on.
Oh, thank you for calling.
I've just got back from Ukraine. I spent 10-11 days over in Kyiv. I'm an economic development consultant. I was helping with the ongoing energy crisis out there.
Oh, yes.
So, yeah, it was a very interesting trip. But I think the thing which, one of the things which stood out to me, other than the stuff which I saw whilst I was out there, was the attitudes to people before I went out to Ukraine and also coming back from Ukraine, where I'd speak to people before going out and say, yeah, I'm going over there. There's an awful situation. It's currently, if you're not aware, it's worse than it was at the start of the full-scale invasion.
It's attrition. It's weather, it's energy, it's destruction of infrastructure. So for an ordinary person, even if they're not directly involved in the war, life has gone from bad to worse with every passing year.
Absolutely. Exactly that. And the amount of people that would say, oh, that's nice. It's good things have calmed down out there now.
Oh, really?
Or people would even say things like, oh, was there a war there a few years ago? And I think that for me, it's to answer your question, yes. what I found was, I think there's so much news fatigue in the UK at the moment, and there's so many conflicts and scandals opening up that when you do speak to people specifically about, in my instance, with the Ukraine, yes. some people just almost roll their eyes and be like, well, it's no different to what's happening in Palestine or what's happening in Sudan. And it's almost as, well, why should we care? Because it's just everybody's killing everybody.
The most obvious answer is geography, isn't it, I suppose?
Well, that's what I said. I said, you know, the barbarians are already at the gates. But
That distinguishes it from... So, I mean, this is going to be part of the answer to the question that I'm asking, but it also reminds us of the distinctions between situations in the Middle East or Africa or elsewhere, because they don't tick the box of having MI6 or the head of the army warning us that we are absolutely on the cusp of catastrophe. That however passionately you may feel about genocide in Gaza, and of course many of us feel extremely passionately about it, there isn't a sense of our security services or our military warning that we'll be next in the firing line in the way that there seems to be with regard to Russia.
Precisely, yeah.
So fatigue only takes us so far, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I think that fatigue is one part of it, and then I think the other side is just simple ignorance. I think people are, in the UK, if we look here, we have our own problems, and I think people yes. are struggling here, and that leads to them just sort of ignoring what's going on the bigger picture on a global scale, when if you're struggling to pay your bills or you're struggling to...
It's a very human... Job. I like your analysis. It's a very human analysis. It's very fair. I wonder about geography. I wonder where we would need to be. You know, I don't remember, and I didn't really study it beyond pre-O-level, but the point at which everybody here started panicking is traditionally regarded as not so much the annexation of Sudetenland as the invasion of Poland, which somehow felt mm-hmm. near enough for the Brits to wake up and smell the coffee. But Poland is a border, borders Ukraine. Some of those towns, Lviv, for example, I think is currently in Poland, but would have been in Ukraine at the time of the Second World War, or the other way round. Forgive my ignorance for not knowing that. So it's not just the number of miles. The world is much smaller today. It's just that
absolutely.
Possibly that the idea of Putin's ambition is not yet seen through the same lens as Hitler's ambition was seen post Chamberlain and post Polish invasion. It was as if they thought, well, I mean, it is just a little local difficulty. We don't need to worry.
And I agree, and I think another thing which people seem to be unaware of or have forgotten is Russia has killed people on British soil
yes,
in the last 15, 20 years. And it's only recently that the UK government has actually come out and said and sort of owned up to this and said, yes, this was Russia.
That's a little unfair. I think they moved pretty quickly, certainly with the Salisbury poisonings and with Alexander Litvinenko. But the confirmation of what has happened to Navalny as well as a consequence of finally smuggling some material out of the country. I think I'm more worried about the lack of reaction and the idea that someone like Nigel Farage can be describing Vladimir Putin as the most admirable politician on the planet after he's ordered the murder of people on British soil. I don't know, though, whether that explains the wider lethargy. Well, I mean, what's it like in Poland? What's it like in Estonia? What's it like in Finland? I mean, how do you, if you've got one ear in both countries, Must have a very big head. If you've got an ear in part because of family connections or history or tradition, or maybe you're just very mobile, you've managed to overcome the idiocy of Brexit and you can still live a life in two European countries at the same time when one of them is the United Kingdom. How does this conversation play out there? I presume the bells are ringing absolutely loudly in Poland and in Finland. I think, didn't the Finnish... I think the Finnish commandos recently raided a tiny island in the archipelago sea because they were concerned about Russian activity. So I presume, but I don't know, that the glass has been broken in those countries and the bells are ringing off the proverbial hook. I'd like a comparison. Why do you think, as an ally of the United Kingdom is not responding to these clarion calls from the most supremely qualified characters? If you want to leave Zelensky out of it because, quote, he would say that, wouldn't he? Why would the head of MI6 and the head of the army be using borderline apocalyptic language? Nick, a great opening. Straight back from Ukraine, straight on the phone to LBC. I rather like that combination of activities. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. If you're struggling to get through, grab the phone line that Nick has just vacated. 0345 6060 973 is the number that you need. Focus upon the messengers, right? Focus upon the identity and the qualifications of the people making these calls. It is the head of our army and the head of our security services, or at least the head of MI6, and they are using the kind of language that Winston Churchill was using in the 1930s, and you're ignoring them. And to a certain degree, so am I. If I didn't do this for a living, I wouldn't have devoted 30 minutes of my life to the topic already today. Why? What would it take for the aroma of coffee to make its way rather further up our collective nostrils? Here's Dominic Ellis with your headlines.
The Education Secretary, Bridget Phillipson, has told LBC's Call the Cabinet that she's aware the anger the student loan system is causing. There's growing concerns over repayment costs, meaning many graduates on Plan 2 loans aren't even covering the interest. The comedian and actor Russell Brand has pleaded not guilty to two further sexual offences, including rape. He's appeared in court this morning, accused of assaults on two women, which were alleged to have taken place in London in 2009. And on the fourth anniversary of Russia's invasion of Ukraine, the UK has imposed further sanctions on Moscow. The package is aimed at squeezing Russia's oil and gas industry to limit funds for the war. LBC weather dry and mild, with sunny spells for large parts of England, some rain for the west of Scotland and Northern Ireland, a high of 15 degrees.
The LBC app. News your way. This is LBC.
At the coast, one call could save lives.
Coast Guard.
In an emergency, call 999 and ask for the Coast Guard.
Driving even a little too fast for the situation is a major cause of collisions, especially on country roads. Think. Don't let your speed creep.
Thanks for the key deliverables, David. Now, who'd like to...
stay out all night! Yahoo!
That's brilliant. So, OK, sales targets. Are we hitting...
the dance floor! Party time! Woohoo!
There's more than one you, and with Specsavers 2 for 1, you can choose glasses for at least two use. From £70 with standard single-vision lenses.
Nice move, David!
Book an appointment at specsavers.co.uk. Conditions apply.
At TfL, we're helping make roads safer. We're continuing to roll out lower speed limits because 20 miles per hour roads have already seen 24% fewer collisions causing death or serious injury. We're also improving junctions to help keep you safe and improving visibility for our bus drivers with new wing mirror cameras. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Comparison of collisions data before and after implementation of 20 miles per hour speed limit.
Sunlight's guaranteed over 50 plan gave confidence to Jane and Chris. With their insurance sorted, they're becoming naturists. Cutting loose in their birthday suits, feeling elegant and free. But when they answered the door, the postman saw more than he expected to see. Sunlight, a little confidence goes a long way. No medical questions and a cash payout. Search Sunlight cover today.
Premiums paid could exceed the payout. Full cover after 1 year. Ages 49 to 85.
It's the last chance to get yourself a ticket for Wednesday's Lotto draw.
It could be you.
Lotto from the National Lottery. Rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
Why are you abseiling down the front of your house, Ross? You have a staircase.
I like doing things the hard way, Albert.
Try something easier, Ross. Get cheaper off-peak energy. It's available at different times, like during the day or weekends. Just get a smart meter and choose a flexible scheme or tariff.
Ooh, I could batch cook some quiche.
Perfect. With a smart meter, getting cheaper energy is easier than you think.
Eligibility varies. Action required. Schemes and tariffs available to selected customers.
James O'Brien on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
I suppose the problem with foreign propaganda is that you don't know how effective it is. If I told you that a character who claimed that more people have got into trouble in this country for free speech offences than have in Putin's Russia had just been given a plum job in a British political party, would you believe me? A statement of such weapons-grade idiocy that you would presumably be able to see its stupidity from space. A lot more people have got into trouble for free speeches offences in the UK than in Putin's Russia, which would come as something of a surprise to people like Alexander Navalny's widow. But if I said to you that he has just been appointed to a plum policy position in a major UK political party, you probably wouldn't believe me. And when I tell you that it's true, you probably wouldn't need any help working out which party it would be. Somebody who's also made their admiration for Viktor Orban and his authoritarian regime in Hungary crystal clear. So you should probably know that European leaders are currently accusing Hungary of sabotaging support for Ukraine on the eve of the fourth anniversary of Vladimir Putin's full-scale invasion. This after Budapest blocked fresh economic measures against Moscow. And the bloke that Nigel Farage has put in charge of policy at his current political party has described the war in Ukraine as a regional Slavic conflict that I don't care very much about. So, for the avoidance of doubt, that position, that very much Kremlin-adjacent position, is not popular in UK politics, although Farage's party, of course, currently is. And he is also the man who has a friend in jail currently for accepting money from Kremlin stooges for spreading Russian propaganda in the European Parliament. So I don't think that is part of the reason why our alarm bells aren't ringing loudly enough, but I do think it's something we should be keeping a very, very close eye on. This character is called James Orr, O-R-R, and he's just been appointed Reform's UK head of policy. I'll just run you through that again. He thinks that the war in Ukraine is a regional Slavic conflict that he doesn't care about very much. He is a great admirer of Viktor Orban, currently being blamed by the European Union for sabotaging support for Ukraine. And he's also a great mate of J.D. Vance, needless to say. Another unelected bureaucrat who seems to be doing rather well in the party run by the sworn enemy of unelected bureaucrats. But why are the rest of us not responding with the urgency that people like the head of the army and the head of MI6, not to mention the head of Ukraine, are demanding? I just want to know why. Gary is in Calais. Gary, what would you like to say?
Morning, sir. Think we're very sunny here, by the way. Looking good.
It's not bad here either.
Fantastic.
I mean, I appreciate this isn't going to be top of your list of priorities working out in Calais as you are, but when are we going to start mowing the lawn, do you think?
I haven't got a lawn, sir.
Have you not got a lawn? All right. Well,
no.
I mean, figure of speech, perhaps. I looked out of my window this morning and I thought, do you know what? It could be sooner rather than later that I get the old lawnmower out. But I digress. Away from lawns and back to World War III.
Okay. I think what we're looking at, really, in reality, is that prior lead-up to the First World War, the Great War.
Yes.
What you've got to remember at that point is it was a target-rich environment for news in the UK. The suffragette movement.
Yeah.
Lovely bunch of lads. You had
ladies, if you please.
Terrorist organisation, bombs, all the rest of it.
They were
you had what was happening in Ireland, home rule. Huge. Country on verge of civil war, many will argue.
Yeah.
Industrial issues as well. And that was what England was looking at. Everyone in France, it was a murder was leading the newspapers. Where a newspaper editor had been shot by a politician's wife. Okay?
Yeah.
And people are taking their eye off the ball. So you've got, what have we got at the moment? Epstein. We've got our own politics. Get rid of Starmer. Everything else that goes with it. You've got Gaza that's going on. That's to people can I say the word, a little bit more sexy than what's been happening in Ukraine for the past 4 years. Even though in 1914 and the lead up, you had the arms race, the Navy was saying at some point there will be a European conflict. And that's where
we are.
Were
they? Who were the harbingers?
Jackie Fisher, people like that.
Do you know, every time you ring in, I get about a dozen messages from people saying, who is this bloke? He's absolutely incredible. How does he know all this stuff? So, briefly, who are you and how do you know all this stuff?
Well, I went to the same school that the Craze went to, not at the same time, but I had a brilliant history teacher. Okay.
I don't know if that answered my question, but it certainly added to the clamour of people asking it, Gary.
And what you had, of course, you had the arms race prior to 1914.
Right.
European nations, Germany wanted its place in the sun. And now we look back and we go, inevitable there was going to be a war.
It was obvious what was going to happen, but nobody thought so at the time.
We didn't
quite have the equivalent, did we, of the head of the army and the head of MI6 saying, oi, look, over there, and we're all going,
yes, so we did
have that.
Yes, we did.
Great.
We did. We had people, British army generals, going around France looking at what was going to happen, where we could fight. We had alliances with France that were secret. Russia was the same with France as well. If one's attacked, the other would come to its support. But the general public, they're having a great time. It's the Edwardian period. Marvellous.
Coming to the end of the flappers, are we, or was that later?
That's later. But the other thing you've had, remember, you could argue you'd had a long period of peace. What have we had now? People like me of my age grew up in the Cold War. It was always on the news. Then for the people since when history ended in 89, whenever it was, you've all relaxed, but now it's coming back. Second World War, we're not in that position.
So for you, the parallels are with the first years of the
20th century.
The first years of the second decade of the 20th century, rather than with the third and fourth decade.
Yeah, and the thing you've got to remember, James, by 1937-38, many people in England are saying war is inevitable. Creation of civil defence is 20 years after the First World War. Yeah, you've had Spain and everything else. It was almost inevitable. There are lots of wars. The First World War never ended.
So the assassination of Archduke Ferdinand and the invasion of Poland, then, what would be the equivalent today of those trigger points?
I had a guy out on tour a couple of years ago,
right,
who had a company that protects against cyber warfare. And he kept on disappearing off every minute. And his mum said, look, he's paid for this, loving the tour, but first chance he's got to come away. And I said to him, what do you do? And he said, I do a company that got cyber protection for major government parts of industry. And he started telling us about the two parts of cyber warfare. One of our politicians, can't remember his name now, opened up a power station about 3 years ago, walked away from it 2 hours later, the power station shut down. He said, you remember that? I went, yeah. He said, that come from China.
French railways, just in the run-up to the Olympics.
Air traffic
slightly
control.
Underreported sabotage there. But you're not answering my question. Oh, you think it will be something on that scale that is inarguably visited upon us by Russia, and that will be the wake-up call? Because I'm asking what the wake-up call might be.
Increase in cyber warfare, collapse of possibly the banking system, transport systems, followed on then by possibly... And the other thing is, does Putin want to open up a second front?
MI6, mate, and I don't know whether you know this, it was a rather splendid report in the Telegraph today that I've already cited. Intelligence officials say the Kremlin may stage deniable attacks on a grander scale to paralyse transport, communications and energy networks while complicating any invocation of the alliance's Article 5 defence clause. Quoting now the head of MI6, a sabotage campaign is less likely to produce consensus around Article 5 than a conventional Russian military operation. I beg your pardon, that's an unidentified intelligence officer speaking to the Daily Telegraph. Deniability makes attribution harder, and without certainty, it becomes much trickier to rally a support. So I disagree and agree with you. I think that is likely to happen if it isn't happening already, but I don't know that it would be quite the trigger point.
Sorry to talk across you. What are the Russian embassies been doing through the 50s and the 60s, etc., during the Cold War, all over the world? Exactly the same thing.
Getting people in place for...
Getting people in place, getting in touch with political extreme parties on both sides, left and right.
Yeah, of course.
Getting involved in, hate to say it, CND that was proved, the IRA.
Infiltrating and signing up. Infiltrating and recruiting, and sometimes doing it through blatant ways, like bribing people.
Even
like,
training people.
Yeah. Right, I'm still not getting the trigger point, but that's not your problem. For people who are fascinated by your backstory, just tell them why you're in Calais and what you do while you're there.
Semi-retired now, battlefield guide, historical guide, in an area, if it's drenched in history, normally tends to be covered in blood.
Good Lord.
And that's my background.
You're a poet as well. Thank you, Gary. It's always a pleasure. It's always a pleasure to talk to you, even on, and it is usually fairly bleak territory. Speaking of brilliant journalists, it's Luke Harding in Kyiv reporting upon Hungary's sabotage of EU support for Ukraine. And if you wanted to take Gary's words a little further about the effort that is put into subverting and signing up allies, either in the spreading of propaganda or in the undermining of European interests in favour of Kremlin interests, then you just have to make a list of people that are very open about their support for Viktor Orban and very open about their admiration of Vladimir Putin. I think I've joined enough dots for you to be able to do that last bit. No, I'll do it myself. So the bloke that Farage has just appointed of head of policy is a tireless admirer of Viktor Orban. Farage's friend and party leader in Wales has been sent to jail for taking bribes from Kremlin stooges, and Nigel Farage remains an ardent admirer of Vladimir Putin. In fact, that's not fair. He admires Vladimir Putin more than any other politician on the planet, except presumably himself.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
Why is someone eighth in Nigeria and seventh in... We don't need it. I think three, max. One, two and three, that's all you need. Everyone else can be jettisoned. That's because we don't need any more than that. And then they will be forced to, God forbid, go and get a proper job or, you know, actually contribute to their own piles of cash. That might be the way forward, I think. Don't see anything wrong with it.
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
I'm Natasha, and this is my NHS story. I went to the GP because I'd found a lump in my breast, and the GP referred me to a CDC centre. It was just really welcoming from the moment I arrived. To just be reassured all in one day was fantastic.
The government is opening new community diagnostic centres, with many already available 12 hours a day, 7 days a week, so the NHS can be there for all of us when we need it. Find your closest one at gov.uk/NHS Fit for the Future. Available England-wide.
At ulisprosperity.com, you buy the car and we pay you up to £600 per month in rental income. For conditions, visit ulisprosperity.com.
And when teams feel supported, they can achieve anything.
Sorry, just had even more of my team are off ill.
Have you tried Benenden Health? It's easy to set up. They've got a GP helpline you can book 24/7.
Where were we?
A coffee break, hopefully.
Press play on your people's health with a wide range of healthcare services for less than £16 per employee per month. Search Benenden for Business. Fee reviewed periodically. T's and C's apply. Qualifying periods apply for some services. UK only. Visit benenden.co.uk.
It's the last chance to get yourself a ticket for Wednesday's Lotto draw.
It could be you.
Lotto. From the National Lottery. Rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
When the days are cold and dark, we Swedes don't let the weather dampen our spirits. We make it as comfortable as possible. We light candles, settle into the sofa with a fika, sheltered from the world outside. We can't offer you a cozy Swedish log cabin, but we can give you the next best thing. Visit the Volvo new car event between 18th of February and the 11th of March for event offers on selected new cars across the Volvo range. Thoughtfully designed and shaped by the Swedish way of life, giving you that inviting feeling all year round. Order online at volvocars.com or book an appointment at your local Volvo retailer.
Offers vary by model and apply to model year 26. Retail customers only, subject to availability, terms apply.
It's not easy being a clamp, stuck on the wheel of the one person on the street who didn't tax their car. Yeah, Graham at number 7, I'm talking about you. Bet the neighbourhood group chat is as well. Wish I had a group chat. Maybe I can chat to myself.
Hi, Clampy. How's it going?
Not great, Clampy. Being clamped to the only N-Tax car for miles is so lonely.
Over 98% of drivers tax their vehicle on time. Tax it. Don't risk it. Visit gov.uk/DVLA/taxit.
James O'Brien. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
It's 10:47. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. If I was in a more miserable place as a person at the moment, I might cite this as proof of the pudding that we're eating together this morning. I'll say, I'll tell you why we're not properly panicking about, I'll tell you why. My inbox sort of had something of a flurry about 8 minutes ago. Can you work out why? I'll give you a little flavour. James O'Brien, if you care even a tiny bit about wildlife, you do not mow the lawn until May. Capital letters. Most people know this. Thank you, Ellen. That's a little unmeasured. I am cutting my lawn on my tractor in Shropshire, listening to your great programme on my headphones. All the best, Nigel. So, not that one. So, there you go. And it is far from alone. We cut our grass all year round in Devon, another texter tells me. And I too have been looking out the window wondering whether we might actually crack it open this weekend. The lawnmower, that is. So, there you go. If I were in a less joyful place as a person, I'd probably start railing against people who have got in touch with the programme to talk about lawnmowers and lawn mowing when we are examining the likelihood of World War III already being underway. And, of course, there's a rather massive flaw in that criticism and condescension, which is it was me that introduced lawn mowing to a conversation about the possible imminence of World War III. So I think we can all smile about it and move back to the central question, which is why are we not responding rather more urgently to these warnings? It is 10:49. Terry is in Birmingham. Terry, what would you like to say?
On the much more important international issue of will my lawnmower start on the first pull when I get it out of the shed after it's been in the shed all winter, I mean, that's a really pressing thing, isn't it?
It is, of course it is. You can hold two thoughts in your head at the same time. You can be worried about World War III and wondering when you're going to mow your lawn for the first time in 2026 and whether your lawnmower is going to start on the first pull. God, first I know, it's a petrol mower. Go on.
So, I've seen the coffee, I've brought the coffee, I've drunk the coffee, and I'm sit up, bolt upright like a meerkat at the moment, right, with what's currently going on. Personally, I think we made our mistakes way back when Russia invaded Crimea.
Yes.
And what we should have done is been much more robust on that.
And that's Obama, that's on Barack Obama,
yes,
I think, isn't
well,
it?
Well, exactly. And allowed Ukraine into the EU, allowed them to join NATO, because that would have solidified all of the Baltic states that after the Cold War ended, their independence would have given them some security. It would have saved Poland having to go on high alert, because speaking to some Polish people I know, they're on high alert at the moment because of what's going on. But if I wanted to attack any country like Britain, I would call my military blokes into a room and I would say to them, do you remember those weapons you were showing me a couple of months ago that can kill all the communications in a country and turn off all the satellites and all the banking and everything? Yeah. Can you roll them out for me? They turn round to me and they say, well, you know, in Britain, they play the national lottery. And you go, yes. And they go, if you try and play the national lottery when you're in France, it'll tell you can't, because it knows you're in France.
Right.
And it knows you're not in the UK. So the boffins would turn around to me and say, oh, Tez, if you want to use these weapons, what you have to do is you, rather than doing it from outside the country in Russia, you need to do it from inside the country. How do I do that then? Well, you buy some properties and then we'll smuggle all the pieces of these weapons into these properties and we'll build these weapons inside these buildings, and that's how we'll launch an attack against Britain.
So your response to this paragraph in the Daily Telegraph today was rather less shocked than mine, and I'm going to read it for the benefit of everybody else. Britain is seen as vulnerable to such an attack. While suspicious property acquisitions close to the MI6 headquarters in Vauxhall, central London, and the US Embassy at Nine Elms have been investigated, security experts and some politicians fear Russia may have acquired or will seek to acquire remote properties overlooking the Trident submarine base at Faslane, where Scotland or subsea cable landing points in Shetland. There are also fears that Russians could have bought houses around RAF Akrotiri in Cyprus.
What a surprise.
This is a bit scary. I mean, a fair play to you for relaying it in such a cheery fashion, but this is rather more scary than most people listening probably realise.
Which pulls back to why...
Should we go back to talking about the lawns?
Well, no, I was going to go back to why the country isn't getting into the furore that it should. And it comes down to either the boffins that are advising the Prime Minister and the government are supremely confident that these attacks can't happen because of how secure our systems are and our intelligence agencies are.
Yes.
Or they don't want to scare people. And therefore it's social engineering.
Well, they're trying to scare people today.
Yes, of course. Certain people are, but the government isn't coming out and saying, yes, this is a real concern.
It kind of has. I mean, I suppose Starmer's problem is if he comes out and says what the head of MI6 or the head of the army is saying, then they'll
change
say,
his
well,
mind next week.
Well, there's always that possibility. he gets battered ad infinitum by demands that they raise income tax to increase military spending or that they all of those things. So, just out of interest, because I ask Gary some personal questions as well. Why are your ears twitching so much on these subject matters when the general experience of the population is the opposite in many ways?
It's dominoes. It's one domino after another, isn't it? And it's putting two and two together and arriving at four, not six or
so
eight.
You're just fascinated by geopolitics then?
Yes. The American weapons about shutting down. Because if you think when America invades a country, because they're the ones who have done it recently, the first thing they do is shut off communications. And I've always said, if the internet went down in Britain tomorrow, we would be 3 days away from almost civil war in this country. And remember, you'd have no banking, no communication, no talking to each other.
So
no
we've got to get
about.
Over the images of either, Russian tanks crossing the Polish border. When we've
it's
got to instead
that.
Look at the likelihood of, as you say, a cyber attack that brings the country to its knees. Have you done anything personally to prepare for this? Because I do you see what I mean? Have you tried to insulate yourself from this possibility?
IKEA do a really good mattress that has got a hollow area inside and you can fill it with cash and other things.
That's not quite what I had in mind. You're doing that thing again, aren't you? I don't know what you could do. You could stockpile and stuff. I mean, I'd have laughed at you 5 years ago if you'd said to me, well, I've got a secret cellar full of mineral water and beans.
My view is slightly different because you could do the survivalist view and fill your shed with tins of beans and curries stuff like that. They can get from Tesco's because I've looked at them as well. Yeah. My view is if it was about to happen, I'd walk out into my garden and just wait for it to arrive.
And just roll with it as it goes.
Yeah, just literally.
Would you though? I don't know if you would.
No, I'd fill the shed.
You'd fill the shed. Mate, this is a country. We couldn't, we started stockpiling bog roll when everybody had, when there was a pandemic, a medical pandemic. We would not be very well equipped to deal with this, would we?
And in the interests of fairness, I just want to say, as we've got onto the discussion of stockpiling food, I don't want to start anything off.
No, of course not. not unless you've got shares. Terry, thank you. Extraordinary. Terry and Gary, both possessed of the ability to discuss really detailed, complicated and quite frightening things in such a human and warm fashion. If we put them in charge of communications, maybe the rest of us would wake up a little more sharply to the threats that we are currently facing. But, would they do a better job than the head of the army and the head of MI6? If you're just joining us, that's the formation of today's first conversation. Britain's army chief warns we're on a collision course with Russia, while the head of the MI6 makes very similar noises about being just below the threshold of war. She says Russia is testing us in the grey zone with tactics that are just below the threshold of war. And a brilliant report in the Telegraph drawing on intelligence investigations into the possible coordinated sabotage campaign Russia is preparing by reportedly buying up properties in the immediate environs of sensitive areas. Sheesh. And that's before I remind you that Volodymyr Zelensky has already said that Putin has started World War III and must be stopped. Anybody else got an answer yet to the question of why we were supposed to be worried about a European army? Unless you're actually on the side of the Kremlin, why would you have spent any time at all over the last 20 years warning against a European army? That, to me, is one of the great questions of our age, because it was a large part of Brexit propaganda. And I've never heard a satisfactory answer to the question of why we were supposed to be frightened of an army that we would be in, when I'm no historian, but generally populations face more trouble from armies that they're not in. It would be an enemy country's army that you should be worried about. Like, for example, the army overseen by the man that Nigel Farage admires the most in the world. Why would he be telling you to be frightened of an army that you were in, that we were in? Perhaps someone will get the chance to ask him. 10:57 is the time. Martin is in Rousey in on the Orkney Islands, I think. Martin, what would you like to say?
Indeed, yeah. I don't want to get into the debate about in or on, but yeah, we're in the Orkney Island group. The previous two callers have absolutely hit the nail on the head. What's needed for us to change? We need to lose something. And in the modern world, they're absolutely right. When the lights go out and the internet goes down, that's when people will finally realise. Because we've got a very carefully curated apathy within society. And that apathy is why we've got, and we've accepted, a degradation of the NHS, a degradation of GP services, of police on the streets, all of our services in the pursuit of keeping our council tax low, which is hideous
logic.
Fallacy.
Yeah.
All of that has been there, curated over many governments, but sadly since Margaret Thatcher's time. It's that the only thing we're going to lose is when the internet goes down and the lights go out and then people suddenly realise, I can't watch my Traitors on TV or Love Island and I can't go on my Facebook. That's the thing that's going to make the big difference.
Well, plausible deniability, though. That's another fascinating part of today's report into the possible launch of sabotage campaigns and the acquiring of networks whence those campaigns could be launched, is that it becomes deniable in a way that wouldn't trigger the relevant article of NATO's. It wouldn't trigger Article 5 if there was plausible deniability, I suppose. You can't invoke Article 5.
My good friend Alfie that I used to work with on the ambulance always said the same thing. It's that level of confusion will then be exploited by other people. So thank you for educating me there, Alfie.
I haven't. Alfie has, yeah, exactly that. And of course, you mentioned Alfie. I'll mention Carol Cadwallader, who was sounding these alarm bells quite a long time ago and getting all manner of trouble and abuse for it. Andrew Neil calling her a crazy cat lady when she's subsequently been proved right about pretty much everything, while Andrew Neil is yet to be proved right about... And that's not fair. He's no Dick Littlejohn, is he? He understands some of the threats that Donald Trump represents, while Dick sits there writing columns about how he wants to be governed by the serial felon rather than by a man who prosecutes felons. But that idea of us not being alive to the scale or the urgency of the threat, I'm afraid, has never sounded more worrying, has it? And how gratifying and uplifting to hear from people who are living in the same world that we're living in and who are feeling what we should probably all be feeling.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 11 o'clock, the Education Secretary has told LBC that she's aware of the anger the student loan system is causing. There are concerns over repayment costs, meaning many graduates on Plan 2 loans aren't even covering the interest. Ministers have previously said the threshold for repayments will be unfrozen in the next few years. But speaking on LBC's Call the Cabinet this morning, Bridget Phillipson said the government will look at what can be done.
Part of the challenge with reforming the student finance system is that whilst it can often seem superficially attractive to do things like changing the interest rate, it doesn't always have the desired effect in terms of making the system fairer, particularly for less well-off students. It's a really complex system. It's not a system that I would have put in place, but we are where we are.
Separately, Bridget Phillipson's also told LBC that she can guarantee no child will lose support as part of changes to the special educational needs system. £4 billion proposals outlined yesterday included changes to children's educational health and care plans in England. Peter Mandelson has been released on bail after his arrest on suspicion of misconduct in public office. He's been accused of forwarding sensitive information to Jeffrey Epstein while he was business secretary. Lord Mandelson has always denied any wrongdoing. Russell Brand has pleaded not guilty to two further sexual offences. The comedian and actor is accused of assaults on two women, which were alleged to have taken place in London in 2009. LBC's Fraser Knight has more details from Southwark Crown Court.
The 50-year-old was wearing an open animal print shirt and held a cowboy-style hat to his chest as he spoke only to confirm his name and to plead not guilty to a charge of rape and a charge of sexual assault. The judge told him he's aiming to have another hearing towards the end of March before a trial's due to get underway later this year.
Russell Brand has previously denied five other charges related to four women between 1999 and 2005. The UK has announced new sanctions against Russia on the fourth anniversary of the invasion of Ukraine. Keir Starmer said it's the biggest range of measures since the first year of the conflict. The package is aimed at cutting off critical oil revenues for Moscow. And on-demand video platforms in the UK are set to come under stricter regulation from the media watchdog Ofcom. Streaming giants like Netflix and Prime Video will have to follow rules around harmful and offensive content and accessibility features like subtitles. The government says the move reflects changing viewing habits. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 23 at 10,661. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.14. LBC weather, dry and mild, with sunny spells for large parts of England, some rain for the west of Scotland and Northern Ireland, with a high of 15 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
If you want to save a few quid, British Gas have a way. You get half-price Lecky, and it's called Peak Save. On every Sunday, it's the smart thing to do if you're regular folk or furry and blue. 11 till 4, let the good times begin. You could charge up the car or take the dryer for a spin. Half price electricity, what joy that brings. With British Gas Peak Save, we're taking care of things. T's and C's apply, eligible tariff and smart meter required.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It's 4 minutes after 11. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. A complete change of pace now, and indeed direction, with one of those moments that I think is extraordinary. And you are going to respond either by joining me in shock and awe, maybe not awe, wonder, shock and wonder, or by going, oh, James, really? You were today years old when you finally worked this out for yourself? So I've been doing this job now for... How many years have I been doing this job, Keith? Do we know? I actually marked my 20th anniversary on LBC recently, but nobody noticed. Some people get cake. I think one of my colleagues celebrated 20 years on Classic FM recently, and they basically closed down the whole of Leicester Square to fill it with dancing troupes and majorettes and cheerleaders, all sorts of things. I closed the airports to celebrate that. I marked 20 years on LBC, I think, either last January or the January before, and literally nobody mentioned it at all. Didn't get anything. I didn't get a clock. Didn't get a cake. Didn't get any nothing. No party popper. There was nothing to be seen. Keith smiled. That was nice. I think he was thinking that my retirement must be drawing closer, and that put a lovely, lovely smile on his little cherubic cheeks. But nothing. I got nothing. But in all the years I've been doing this job, I realised this morning that I have been letting you down on one particular subject. I'm sure more than that, but I've done something really stupid. And I'd go further, and I would say that everybody in the media does exactly the same thing, and probably for exactly the same reason. You probably need a few more clues before you can work it out for yourself. So the story that has made me realise that I have been handling all such conversations in a really ridiculous fashion is on the front page of the Times today, and it appears under the headline, Labour to End Middle Class Domination of Top Schools. Can you work out yet what I've been getting wrong for 21 years, or thereabouts? It's hard to keep track because no one ever celebrates my anniversaries in the way that they do everybody else's. Can you work out yet what the subject is, what it is that makes the way I've handled conversations about schools and education in this country so spectacularly stupid? I've got to take my medicine. I'm always calling other people stupid. So can you work out what it is? So because so many people in prominent positions in the UK media were privately educated themselves, and because so many people in prominent positions in the British media have historically privately educated their own children, all conversations about this about education in this country are viewed through the lens of private education being a relatively normal experience. This despite the fact that only about 7% of the population avail themselves of the services offered by fee-paying schools. But we are living in a country where attending a fee-paying school is still the best guarantor of achieving certain levels of success and status later in life. Not the only one, and of course there are exceptions, but generalizations are generalizations for a reason. So whenever we have turned our attention to, no, I can't blame you for this, because you might either have sat there fuming at the ludicrous imbalance of these conversations, or like me, you may not have clocked how ridiculous it is, because people like me have been in charge. People like me have been in charge of these conversations for forever, actually. You think back to when the public schools were founded. People like me have been in charge of conversations about education in this country since conversations about education in this country started unfolding in public. Since education became universal, conversations about education have been dominated by people like me. You would have moments, wouldn't you, like when grammar schools were replaced by comprehensive schools. But you want to wonder why that was widely treated by the UK media as a bad thing? It was because the grammar schools are perceived, or were perceived, by people who went to fee-paying schools as the second division. And therefore a good thing, because you can't really justify the sustaining the survival of the first division if you don't also have a second division. And if you end up in the third or fourth division, well, bad luck, I'm afraid. It's a meritocracy that we live in, despite the fact that we pay for our education and you don't pay for yours. Every single conversation about schools I have ever conducted or contributed to has worked upon the premise that private education is normal. And has provided a lens through which we have examined everything else. And I only realised that this morning. And I'm really sorry. Because it's insane. It's absolutely insane. I'm not making any bones about my own guilt here. I went to a fee-paying school, and my children have been to fee-paying schools and state schools. Unlike me, I never spent a day in a state school. Never spent an hour in a state school as a pupil. But I talk to you every morning as if that's a normal experience, when it's an experience shared by 7% of the population. So let's say, give or take, 7% of the people listening to this. There's a very real possibility that the only privately educated person you come across on a regular basis is me. Unless you listen to The Breakfast Show, in which case it would be me and Nick. And, of course, all the people editing the newspapers that you see occasionally, but you probably don't feel that you have a personal relationship with them in the way that you do with your favourite radio presenters. How many privately educated people do you know apart from me? And the answer to that question for a huge swathe of the population will be, what, you mean personally? You mean I can phone them up and talk to them whenever I want? Yeah, just you, mate. How many prime ministers are privately educated? Spoiler alert, all of them. Well, all right, not quite. John Major wasn't. Margaret Thatcher, grammar school. But, you know, Keir Starmer, comprehensive schoolboy. How rare is that? And I've got this, it's not Stockholm syndrome, but, you know, when you realise that you've been doing something wrong for years, it's very hard to start undoing it. Malcolm Gladwell, is it Malcolm Gladwell who comes up with the 1,000 times theory? You have to do something 1,000 times before it gets baked in to your consciousness. So we're currently using the wrong door at work. And if I come out of the tube, I haven't done it 1,000 times yet, but I've reprogrammed my brain, so I go to the right door that is actually the wrong door. I go to the door I can get through, as opposed to going to the door that I can't get through and realising that I've got the wrong way. This is why the 1,000 times theory is really interesting, because if I come at work from a different angle, if I come into, for example, Waterloo Station and walk over the bridge, I still find myself catching myself heading towards the wrong door that I can't get through, as opposed to the wrong door that is currently the right door, while the right door is the wrong door because you can't get through the right door, which is now the wrong door. Are you still with me at the back? So you do it 1,000 times. Also, don't snigger, because it's nothing like that, but I broke our bed recently. And I had to put it up on books. I have a lot of books, happily. So the bed was on books for about a month while we were waiting for the new bed to arrive. And I'm no handyman. So if I forgot to just rearrange the books before getting into bed, it was my side of the bed. It would collapse again. So I spent 4 weeks, I couldn't put my socks on sitting on the edge of the bed. I spent 4 weeks feeling unsafe in bed. And now we've got the new bed, and I haven't yet reconditioned. I did that nowhere near 1,000 times, but I hadn't processed the new scenario. Do you see what I mean? I'm still not living in a way that recognises that my bed is now safe. I'm still not arriving at work in a way that recognises that the old door is the new door and the wrong door is the right door. Do you see what I mean? And when I talk to you about schools, I still can't quite believe that the most interesting element of all conversations about education is fee-paying schools. Because every conversation I've ever had or heard on the UK media has recognised the fact that the most interesting element of it is the fee-paying schools. Think of the ridiculous extremities of this example. Right, people who will deny the existence of poverty. So if you tell them, for example, that food banks are necessary or that some families run out of money before the end of the month and therefore can conceivably run out of soap or toothpaste, they will climb up upon their stallions of arrogant certainty, or high horses, if you prefer, and insist that there's no such thing. I don't believe in hygiene poverty. Do you know how much a bar of soap costs? It costs 38p. I've just looked it up on the Tesco website. Yeah. People have not got 38p before payday or before the next welfare payment. People regularly and routinely run out of money and they can't dip into their savings account or remortgage the house or phone their mum. They can't do that. They actually run out of money. But the people who deny the existence of that phenomenon will also claim that sticking VAT on school fees is communism. Sticking VAT on school fees for the, by definition, most privileged 7% of parents in the country is basically Stalinism. It's basically no such thing as poverty, but my God, expecting privately educating parents to pay VAT on school fees, that's, you may as well move to Khmer Rouge era Cambodia for that kind. I mean, these people exist. They walk among us. They may sometimes sit behind this microphone, but that's not the point. The point is that we are insane. What an insane country we are. Every conversation I've ever conducted about this has been through the lens of comparing private schools to everybody else, which means I've never done this. Ministers will overhaul admissions so high-achieving state schools are not dominated by children from middle-class families who can afford inflated house prices. Bridget Phillipson, the Education Secretary, will make it easier for poorer children and those with special needs to get places at popular state schools in England. This is in that white paper published yesterday. We've all been focusing on other elements of it, quite rightly and inevitably, but it also revealed that this change to the admissions code will seek to ensure fairness for all families, particularly the most disadvantaged, and indeed children with additional needs. So white working class children will also be helped in the northeast and coastal areas. Missions will focus on radically improving outcomes for children from the currently worst performing demographics, namely white working class, where attainment gaps are too often accepted as inevitable. So for the first time ever, perhaps, we're going to have a conversation about schools in this country that completely ignores the 7% of schools where you have to pay for your children to attend. That's mad. How can we have spent 21 years on the radio having conversations about education that hinge upon the presumption that the most interesting and important element of the entire system is the 7% that pays, that you have to pay for? I want you to tell me this, okay? 0345-6060-973 is the number that you need. What's the difference? I mean, this will sound like a stupid question, but I hope I've set up the reasons why I'm asking it effectively. There's two here. There's the overview, and then there's the inner view. The overview is, how bad is it? If you are not wealthy, comparatively wealthy, how hard is it to get your child into a good school, into a good state school, into one of the best state schools? Are you prepared to tell me that you did actually move house in order to get into a catchment area for a very specific school? I mean, I do actually know people who've done this, and I wouldn't suggest for a moment that those of us who privately educated our children look down our noses at them, but it was always something that struck me as something you do in order to save money. But for millions of parents over the years, there will be no question in your mind whatsoever of sending your children to a fee-paying school, but you want to move heaven and earth to get them into the best available state school. The best available state school. What efforts did you go to? How hard did you work to do that? Or how hard do other people work? I do remember phone-ins in the mists of time about pretending you lived in your mum's house so that you could get your kid into the catchment area. I don't know whether you want to share those stories with me today. But the question that we should be asking, and the question that, I mean, fair play, the government are having a good week. I know it's only Tuesday. But fair play to them for actually having a conversation about education that doesn't labour under the delusion that the most interesting and important element of the entire discourse is fee-paying schools. What I want you to tell me is, what's the difference? I know that sounds like a stupid question, and I apologise in advance for my ignorance, but I've spent most of my career talking about the 7% and completely ignoring the 93%. And if I haven't completely ignored the 93% of schools, I've lumped them all together. It's state versus private. Whereas, in fact, the most interesting element of education for anybody paying proper attention in this country, i.e. not me, is the variety of experiences in that 93% sector. And that's what I need your help with. And I really need your help with it, because this is one of the biggest blind spots I've detected in my entire broadcasting career. I have never asked you what the difference is between a good state school and a bad state school. And I've been doing this for 21 years. I've had countless phone-ins about private education, phone-ins about VAT on school fees, phone-ins about privilege, scholarship, the fairness of the principal. How many conversations have we had about private schools on LBC? Not just me, all of us. When 93% of the population never go anywhere near one. So, what do you think about this proposal that the government will make it much, much easier for children from poorer backgrounds to get into the highest achieving state schools? 0345 6060973. Straight off the cuff, answer to that. The question I really want you to have a crack at helping me with is this. How big are the differences? What are the differences in experience? How many times have we spoken to people who went to a private school and then a state school, and we roll out the red carpet because they can make these powerful and illuminating comparisons? What's the difference between high-performing, high-achieving state schools and low-performing, low-achieving state schools, if you're a pupil, a teacher or a parent, past, present or future? Just talk me, an ignorant man, through the reality that is obvious to almost everybody else. What are the differences? So how hard did you work to get your child into one of the good schools, and why? 0345 6060973. But crucially, what are the differences? Just talk me through the gulf. Let's treat this conversation like we used to treat state versus private brackets, because I'm an idiot, close brackets. Because the important question is, what are the differences between the high-achieving schools and the low-achieving schools that 93% of the population actually go to, rather than that tiny little demographic that I've been obsessed with for my entire broadcasting career? Talk me through the differences. What are the differences, and how hard did you work to get your child into a high-achieving state school? And then, if there's time, how can anybody object to the government trying to throw the doors a little wider so that people from poorer parents can get in too? It's 21 minutes after 11. The number you need is 0345 6060973.
This is LBC.
Whether your dreams involve epic adventure, trying something you've never done before, or just some time to fully relax, you can bank on Lloyds to help make it happen. We've been asking listeners what their aspirations are for the year ahead to help create the ultimate prize packages to inspire that first step. Enter now for your chance to win one of three incredible experiences, thanks to Lloyds and the nation's aspirations. Choose the prize for you at lbc.co.uk.
You've built a career.
You've faced the challenges.
You've gained the skills to do more.
To stretch your abilities.
And help support your community.
At Hampshire and Isle of Wight Constabulary, we value life experience.
So whether your experience comes from business, healthcare, the trades, or raising a family,
your next challenge is waiting for you. Search Hampshire Police Jobs and join Hampshire and Isle of Wight Constabulary.
This time last year, Hassan was working in sales and spent his evenings gaming. Now, he's working as a prison officer.
You know what's come out, it's not worth it. Let's just go in there.
He's tackled cell fires, got through to some of the most challenging prisoners, and helped support their rehabilitation. He's done things he once thought he was never capable of, but he still loves his gaming. An extraordinary job done by someone like you. Search prison jobs now.
You're hopping from call to call, cameras on, pretending you're fine. But underneath, you're irritable and craving the smoke. Don't let nicotine cravings ruin your focus. Nicorette Quick Miss Mouth Spray starts to relieve smoking cravings in as little as 30 seconds. Make 2026 the year you quit and enjoy freedom from smoking and vaping with help from Nicorette. Quitting made real. Nicorette Quick Miss Mouth Spray contains nicotine. Stop smoking or stop nicotine vaping aid. Requires willpower. Always read the label.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
23 minutes after 11, a quick nod back to the last hour. These all made me chuckle. This from Tony. Given today's discussions, James, is there really any point in mowing the lawn at all this weekend? That's a very good point. If you're going to talk about World War III and mowing the lawn in the same hour of radio, you have to recognise that one may cancel out the urgency of the other. And Paul, on a similar theme, says, I haven't got a categorical answer to all the geopolitical issues that you raised, James. However, do not, under any circumstances, mow your lawn until we are fully clear of any ground frost. Otherwise, you will damage the roots of your lawn. Please keep up the good work. Best regards, Paul. We've moved on from this into this territory here that is rather well encapsulated in this text. James, I live in Kent and my relatives are estate agents and the difference in house prices is about £80,000. And we also have the grammar school system and everyone tutors their kids from year three at around £50 a session to get them into those. And here's a good one. Because I did somewhat provocatively suggest that no one's going to object to the idea of making the best schools more available to the poorer children. But I think Sam does. My children attend a state primary school. It's outstanding and in the top 100 in the country. Our housing estate is comparatively wealthy to our town, areas of which are on the national deprivation list. You won't get into the school if you don't live on the estate, and some kids on the estate don't get in, exclamation mark. Are we going to favour kids from other areas rather than kids who live in the catchment area? To which my answer would be, perhaps naively or unfairly, but brackets, I really don't think so, close bracket. Yes, we are. You have to. You want to improve social mobility in this country, you have to break down barricades and raise everybody to the highest standards. And you can't do that if the barricades to people from poorer backgrounds are up. For the record, I'd abolish private education. But until it is abolished, I'm not going to deny my children opportunities that Jacob Rees-Mogg can afford to buy for his. But I don't see how you... Well, anyway, let's get the phone lines open. Chris is in Stoke-on-Trent. Chris, what would you like to say?
Hi, good morning, James. So we live in Stoke-on-Trent. We're not far from the Cheshire border. And albeit we'd only have to move 2 miles to get into a Cheshire school.
Wow.
We're still thinking possibly having to do that, but just touching on what you said there on the house prices, we're in a four-bedroom, semi-detached house here. To get the same property just over the border into Cheshire, we're talking £100,000 to £150,000 more just to get access to a Cheshire school.
And you think that is entirely because of the schools?
Yes, yeah. So don't get me wrong, my wife's a teacher here in Stoke. The teachers all work extremely hard, but unfortunately a huge amount of the time spent by teachers in the area is on behaviour management rather than education and learning opportunities. And the schools within our catchment area, don't get me wrong, I know staff from both, they're very good, but for our children we are thinking, do we take that additional hit on mortgage payments just to gain access to the school just over the border?
So you'd be in the firing line here, really. I don't know how they will do it. The detail hasn't been revealed, but I think it was in Brighton or certainly somewhere there was an experiment where the catchment area is massively increased in size, or reasonably increased in size, depending upon how built up an area is, and then all the pupils applying to all the schools are just divvied up by lottery. And you take whatever school you're given and you jolly well go there. So you could still, I presume, improve your chances by moving house, but you could still end up at the worst performing school in the area where you moved to. And I can sit here and perhaps rather arrogantly, because I'm almost out of the education system full stop. And when I was in it, I was availing myself of private schools for my children. I can say to you, that is a really good idea. I really like the idea of people like you no longer being able to pay to get a better education for your children, while hypocritically acknowledging that I did exactly that for my own.
Yeah. So it is, and as I say, I mean, obviously teaching in general is such a hard job
for sure.
to do.
And the behavioural issues you describe are going to be massively exacerbated by the fact that there are 10, 15, 20 kids in that class with issues rather than two or three. And the reason why there are so many is because the system is a hierarchy. You've got the higher performing schools, which will have the better behavioural issues, and the kids with the biggest behavioural issues are all going to end up in the same school near the bottom of the pile.
Yep.
So you know it's fair, but it's not fair on you.
No.
Yeah, well, at least you're honest. I'd be the same, I imagine. I know it's fair, but it's not fair on me. Do you think it can work?
I think there's so many other things to fix as well in education anyway.
Yes.
As long as something's moving in the right direction, which it hasn't been for a while, then, you know...
They're certainly prioritising, and it hasn't done really since 2010. Whatever you may think of Tony Blair, education, education, education was a mantra upon which they delivered. Looking at the possibility, thank you, Chris, of the government making it easier for children from poorer backgrounds to get into the best schools, and I'm wondering, somewhat belatedly, what the difference is between the best state school and the worst state school. How wide is that spectrum? How broad is that spectrum? How steep is that graph? And it's going to be like the private school education conversation, right? Is that you are going to recognise that it's grossly unfair, but if you're on the right side of the unfairness, you're going to defend it furiously. Except, of course, the people who pretend it's not grossly unfair. Who say, no, I don't think my children get any advantage at all by me spending £40,000 a year to send them to that school. To which, of course, the only reasonable response is, well, why do you spend £40,000 a year to send them to that school then? You're going to move house, 80 grand more in property. You're going to have to find 100 grand to move house. Why are you doing that? Because my children will get a better education. I salute you. I would do the same. But it's not fair. And I approve of a government trying to undo the loophole. Dominic Addis has your headlines.
The UK has announced fresh sanctions against Russia on the fourth anniversary of the full-scale invasion of Ukraine. Sir Keir Starmer, who's virtually co-chairing a meeting of Kyiv's allies, says it's the biggest range of measures since the first year of the conflict. Ministers say they still plan to release documents about Peter Mandelson's appointment as ambassador to the United States. That's despite his arrest on suspicion of misconduct in public office. He was released on bail overnight. And the Education Secretary, Bridget Phillipson, has told LBC's Call the Cabinet that she's aware the anger the student loan system is causing. There's growing concerns over repayment costs, meaning many graduates on Plan 2 loans aren't even covering the interest. LBC weather dry and mild with sunny spells for large parts of England, some rain for the west of Scotland and Northern Ireland, a high of 15 degrees.
This is LBC.
This is what award-winning customer service sounds like from real Octopus Energy calls.
Octopus are an absolute breath of fresh air.
Our customer service is really good.
People like yourself and all of your colleagues have done such a wonderful job.
Your customer service was tip-top, you know, I couldn't fault it.
You stepped it up, I think, for an energy company, so well done.
Octopus Energy, great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 9 years running.
When an offender is released, the probation service keeps them on track so they can find a place to live, which gives them the stability to say no to old habits, making them more likely to attend their supervision meetings. And all of that ripples out to make the community a better place to live. Hello, mate. Search probation service jobs to find out more. An extraordinary job done by someone like you.
McDonald's wraps, all flavour, no mess. If you're looking for something tasty and tidy, today's wrap of the day is sweet chili chicken for just $2.49. So keep your keyboard crumb-free this lunchtime with all the flavour wrapped up neat. Wrap of the day discount not available on delivery orders. Served after 11 a.m. Tikka chicken wrap available until the 13th July 26. Price may vary, subject to availability.
Our pet's in a pickle. We know your furry friends get up to all kinds of mischief. Like when the dog scuffed that entire chocolate cake. Or the time the cat tested his 9 lives from the curtain rail. again. That's why we're here when it matters most, with fuss-free pet insurance policies, including unlimited video call access with First Vet. For pet insurance policies as unique as they are, visit petsinapickle.co.uk.
You plan a holiday, you plan a commute, meal plans, career plans, even workouts need a plan. So doesn't it stand to reason that your money has one too? Because the sad truth is, if it doesn't, it's just sitting there, barely growing, if at all. That's why you need a money plan, and Quilter can help. It's a lot easier to stick to than a workout plan. Money needs a plan. Quilter. Pensions, investments, advice. Find out more at quilter.com.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? A record 9 years running.
This is LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
33 minutes after 11. So I would attribute almost all of the problems historically in this country to two things. The first is deference and forelock tugging, which has rarely been more front and centre than it has with the arrest last week of Andrew Mountbatten Windsor. It's less relevant to the arrest yesterday of Peter Mandelson. But deference and forelock tugging is responsible for so much that is wrong in our country. And the other bit is to paraphrase even Nye Bevan, It's about persuading people on the wrong end of an unfair system that they should be in favour of it. Either due to deference, this is where the two points marry, or due to the largely unjustified belief that they might be on the right side of it one day. You see that a lot in a conversation about taxation. A Scandinavian taxation model would raise up the massive majority of people in this country. You would pay more tax and you would have much better public services. But it will always be resisted because the people that would pay the most more tax, to coin a phrase, will be the richest, who don't need massive improvements in public services, thank you very much, because they don't access them on anything like the scale that the rest of us do. So if you can get the deference and the forelock tugging in place, which goes back to feudalism, and you can persuade the population, as Nye Bevan put it, to use their political power, to poor people or labour workers to use their political power, poverty, he called it, poverty even, to use its political power to keep wealth in power, then you get a country like ours. You get a country like this. No hostages, one of my favourite Blue Sky correspondents puts it best. Britain never abolished feudalism. It disguised it. Private enhanced schooling converts birth advantage into merit. It narrows who can lead, and it teaches people that hierarchy is natural. The system doesn't just create inequality, it creates a belief that it's natural. So you move that conversation into good, middling and bad state schools, and the fact that the best way to get into a good one is to be able to afford to move into the relevant catchment area where property prices could be six figures more than an identical property 2 miles away, as we heard from a caller a moment ago. And you can see the injustice, the unfairness, the inequality and the obstacles to social mobility from 100 miles away. But you might not be opposed to it because you might be on the right side of the unfairness one day. So what's the job of a government dedicated to social mobility and equality? Make it impossible to get your child into a better school by being able to afford a house in a better area. It's not the first time with education issues where I found myself wondering what other countries do. Fee-paying schools are a relative rarity in continental Europe. If I was growing up in Stockholm, where would my child go to school? If I was growing up in Paris, my children were growing up in Paris, or in rural France, where would my children go to school? It's a genuine question. You can text me if you want. It may not be an exciting enough answer for a phone call, but if it is, 0345 6060 973. How mad is our system of both private education, which we're leaving out of the conversation today, and catchment area-driven selection? So your property price, your ability to buy property defines the quality of education that your child receives. How mad is that compared to comparable economies, compared to our European neighbours? 0345 6060 973 is the number that you need. And I don't condemn you for this, because I think I'd have done the same in a different life. But how many mountains did you move to get your child into a good or a top-performing state school? Marina is in Medway. Marina, what made you pick up the phone?
Good morning, James.
Hello.
Hello. I used to work as a teaching assistant here in Medway in a state school. And I would argue that instead of forcing parents to have to move to a good area, what we need to do is we need to start from the bottom up. And we need to, the school that I was working in was one of those lowest schools that had basically been completely forgotten. The staff were incredible. The teachers were brilliant. But it was a systemic issue because ever since austerity came to Medway, you know, the Sure Start centres closed, and the people at the bottom rung of the ladder were affected really badly. There were boys in that school who basically had, they would say it themselves, I've got no future. There were fights. There was another teaching assistant actually had her arm broken, not once but twice.
Good Lord.
Yeah. My own son is a very fragile kind of autistic child, but he loved his mathematics. Mm. So he passed his 11 plus and he got into a grammar school. Now, like you were saying earlier about your own children, I felt terrible because I'm quite a socialist. And I thought, you know,
no, I didn't. I mean, so just for the avoidance of doubt, I never felt particularly terrible. I'd like to live in a country where the option didn't exist. But as long as it exists, I'm not apologising to anybody for taking it.
Oh, no. Absolutely. What I mean is what you said about, well, why shouldn't I get the best for my child? You know, if Jacob Rees-Mogg can, then why shouldn't I? So he got into the grammar school on the basis of his mathematics. And while I was at work in this state school, I would look around and some days I would cry.
Here's my naive thinking. And I acknowledge, well, my possibly naive thinking. I acknowledge that before I say anything out loud. So the only way you can improve the school that you described, the school that you worked in, is by closing the avenue into the school that your son went to, so that the aspirational, sharp-elbowed, pushy, or whatever you want to call them, the kind of parents who wouldn't tolerate the kind of environment that you describe, are having children in the school where currently all the children have been forgotten. You need children in there whose parents are not going to put up with what you've described, as opposed to parents who've kind of opted out of the whole process and are filling their children with absolute absence of aspiration and ambition.
Well, that's true as well. But those parents who really, really cared amongst the state school, they were very few and far between.
Exactly. So we need lots. So the only way we get more of them is by shutting down the opportunity to go to better schools by buying bigger houses or more expensive houses.
Well, that's true. But I also think because it's a systemic issue, because of the whole area, something happened to it with austerity. The heart came out of the community. And, you know, it just feels like people are, they're really struggling.
But if you've got brilliant teachers, like you said,
yes,
and you've got a school that is typified by systemic failure, despite having brilliant teachers, then the only option that's open to you, if you're committed to improvement, is to change the intake. There's nothing else you can do if the teachers are brilliant. I mean, you could throw all the money in the world at it. If the kids aren't engaging, you need to create an environment in which the kids will engage. They can't be what they can't see. They can't see aspirational children who think that education is a passport to a better life because there aren't any in their class. So how do you fix that? You don't let parents move to... You take 10 schools in the area, the best to the worst, and you take all of the kids applying. So, say, 1,000 kids are applying that year, about 100 times 10. Yeah, so about 1,000 kids are applying that year, and you just divvy it up. That's it, you're going there. No second choices, no arguments. You're going to that school. It's the worst school in the area, and my little Johnny is one of the brightest buttons that the country has ever seen. Great! And Johnny will influence everybody. It's the only way you do it. It's the only way you make things better for everybody.
I would like to think that would work.
It would work. I guarantee it.
Would be is if the quieter, the more vulnerable children. You know, I used to look around and think my son wouldn't last 2 minutes in this school.
Yeah, but he wouldn't be in that school because that school would contain more people like your son.
Yeah,
and more people like me, and more people like. Why are you shaking your head? My producer's shaking her head at me. Am I being very naive? My state-educated producer is shaking her head at me, but I don't know what other option there is. Other countries do this as if it's absolutely second nature. We're so feudal, we're so baked into the idea of social hierarchy. I appreciate that fragility and quietness are not qualities that we would describe as inherited privilege, but if everybody gets treated exactly the same, the water rises and all the boats rise with it.
Yes, the issue is we had a lot of special needs children, and therein lies the...
Well, that's also a huge part of the white paper as well, is that all schools are going to have to do a better job of accommodating special needs pupils, which means they won't all end up in the schools at the bottom of the ladder who couldn't get in anywhere else for various reasons.
Yeah, I completely agree with what Labour is doing. I just think that it's an issue that's come from a societal kind of shift after austerity.
Of course it is. And no one knows that better than the Labour government does. I mean, they were responsible for the quality of education that was available until austerity started, and they were stuck on the sidelines watching as David Cameron and George Osborne treated the international global financial crisis of 2008 as if it had been caused by there being too many Sure Start centres in Medway or too many libraries in Wolverhampton, to paraphrase Alexei Sale for the billionth time. But what fascinates me, and I appreciate we're on similar pages, is the baked-in resistance of much of the British public, the forelock-tugging, deferential, probably Brexit-voting British public, who will just sit there and go, no, I think it's perfectly right that Jacob Rees-Mogg's children should receive a much better education than mine. He's a better quality of human being, and that's why I think we should leave the European Union, so that I can feel like I'm a better quality of human being than a Frenchman or a Pole. It's ludicrous humanity hierarchy that infests every single aspect of English life. It's not this bad in Scotland, I don't believe. You'd know better than I do. But it is insane. So how, I mean, tell me what they do in other countries. If I'm in France, Paris, Spain, France, Germany, Spain, where did my kid go to school? How easy would it be for me to secure a better education for my child on the strength of how much my house is worth? Eileen's in Woodford. Eileen, what would you like to say?
Hi there, James. Yeah. So it's Eileen, actually, but that's fine.
So sorry. Come on, Eileen.
Right. So anyway, basically, I moved heaven and earth to get my children into the school that I wanted to get them into. I used to leave my husband and children sleeping on a Sunday morning and drive all around the catchment area so that I knew as soon as a house came on the market that it would be within the right catchment.
Yeah, I
rediscovered my Catholicism. I would get myself to mass.
Catholicism. Put your teeth in and try again.
Oh my God! Thank God! I didn't slip up.
Well, that's the only reason I corrected you, in case it still mattered.
Oh my days! I made apple pies and used to make my children present them to the priest, so it would be known. I did anything and everything, and do you know what? It paid off royally. They both went to wonderful universities, LSE. My son's doing a PhD now. You know, I'm just so, and I'm now a foster mum, and I'm doing exactly the same for the children in my care. I am that pushy parent, and I don't care. I own it.
You're the best, and if every parent was like you, then we'd probably have the most healthy economy on the planet. But they're not, and I'm not going to argue with you. By the way, I can't dispute any of the things that you've done on a personal level. But you're...
It shouldn't have to be like this, should it?
And also, parents like you are going to be so much more valuable in schools that are currently poorly performing. You're going to be the parents that turn those schools around.
Do you know, my parents were both teachers. I think that's why I feel so strongly about the education. And I feel so strongly that every child should have a great education and a great start. I used to work in the city years ago with investment bankers for years. And I saw the privilege and the entitlement, you know. And it's just so unfair. So that's why now, working with children so from such unprivileged backgrounds, I just feel so strongly that they get what they deserve too.
Well, you know what that is. You know what that is, don't you, Aileen?
What's that?
That's the Catholicism kicking in.
There you go.
That's it, isn't it? That's
all. It was always there, wasn't it?
It never goes away. Born a Catholic, once a Catholic, always a Catholic. But I don't think, and this is where I think I probably sound naive, but I don't think you can raise all the boats without removing the roots that you and I in different ways have availed ourselves of. As long as those roots are there, those loopholes are there to get a better education because you've got sharper elbows or because you're getting up earlier or because you've got more money, you're never going to actually have a system that properly recognises and helps the children that we're both talking about.
Yeah.
And it's a problem. So unless the government actually takes away our ability to do the things that we're both proud of doing, and both will hopefully, you already do, hopefully one day I'll point at my children as being proof that we did the right thing, and I kind of already can actually, but that option shouldn't be there if we genuinely want to help the kind of children you're fostering, as opposed to your own children. Here's the thing, because Aileen mentioned, in fact, Aileen, you'll like this, because this is, we talk a lot about merchant bankers and lawyers, and the figures are ridiculous of the percentage of High Court judges or the percentage of other like really privileged professions that are completely and disproportionately dominated by privately educated people. Something quite weird happened to me yesterday that really sums up entitlement in quite a soft and quiet way. So you know this film that won the BAFTA, the Tourette's film that won the BAFTA. You saw that yesterday?
Yeah, I saw that.
So I'm watching that win the BAFTA and I'm reading about it. And I saw the film when it came out and I thought it was fantastic. And I just clocked that I went to school with one of the producers of that film. And for somebody, yeah, you see your response there? For someone who went to a school like mine, that is just the most normal thing imagined. Oh, yeah, oh, look at that. It's old Chomo there from St. Edward's House. I went to school with him and he's now produced that. So at a school like mine, that is the most normal thing in the world. For everybody else in the country, if you knew the producer of a BAFTA-winning film, it would be like, oh, my goodness me, look at that. That's what you're doing. That you're creating sections of society where normal is abnormal and abnormal is normal. I don't know how you break it down without doing the things that would stop people like Aileen and me from doing what we did for our own children. 11:48 is the time.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
It's been hailed as the biggest change in education for a generation to make schools more inclusive. 60,000 new SEND places.
Bridget Phillipson, the Education Secretary, Minister for Women and Equalities. And let's get straight to the calls. Sarah is in Basingstoke. Sarah, you're through to Bridget Phillipson.
I'm calling because I have a 3-year-old son who's non-verbal and autistic and he has an EHCP. Can you guarantee no child's EHCP will be taken away?
We will make sure that children's needs are reviewed and that the right support is put in place so all children will have an individual support plan, all children with special educational needs. That will mean more children than right now.
So, again, the guarantee, no child who is getting support will lose it. You can guarantee that?
I can, because they will get support under the new system, the new that will involve individual support plans.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Back tomorrow morning from 7. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
This is what award-winning customer service sounds like. From real Octopus Energy calls.
Your customer service was tip-top. You know, I couldn't fault it.
The customer service was really good.
The people are friendly on the telephone. You can always get a problem solved.
Octopus are an absolute breath of fresh air.
People like yourself and all of your colleagues have done such a wonderful job.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 9 years running.
My name's Mark and this is my NHS story. The sensation in my neck was painful all the time. Once I spoke to my GP, they referred me to my CDC. They got me in very, very quickly. The amount of pain I went through for something so easy, why hadn't I done this 4 months before?
The government is opening new community diagnostic centres, with many already available 12 hours a day, 7 days a week, so the NHS can be there for all of us when we need it. Find your closest one at gov.uk/NHS Fit for the Future. Available England-wide.
Tonight's EuroMillions jackpot is £124 million.
I think that deserves a whoop whoop. Whoop whoop! Thank you, faraway person. Get in tonight's EuroMillions draw. Play on app.
Estimated jackpot. Account terms, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
That quiet moment behind the wheel. The perfect space to get your thoughts in order. With the stylish HRV Hybrid, you get the head-turning design you want with the space and flexibility you actually need. Because every journey matters. Explore the full Honda range online at honda.co.uk. Honda, the power of dreams.
With over 50 years' experience at Fidelity, we believe there's a difference between investing and being invested. Investing is having access to guidance, tools and expert insights. Being invested means feeling confident about your future. Investing is choosing from a wealth of investment options. Being invested means focusing on your long-term goals. For ISAs, pensions or advice, be truly invested with Fidelity. Go to fidelity.co.uk. Your capital is at risk. Terms apply.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? A record 9 years running.
James O'Brien on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
11:51 is the time. Some of the conversations that I toy with the idea of having with you change before we have them. And some ideas fall out of favour. And some grow in appeal to me. I was very uninterested yesterday in a conversation about what happened at the BAFTA ceremony in the context of a radio phone-in. I was very interested by what happened and intrigued, but I didn't think it was a radio phone-in because I thought you'll only get two calls. I mean, you'll get 100 calls, but there'll only be 2 points of expression. There'll be people who don't understand what Tourette's is like, who are outraged that the inspiration for the film, I Swear, could have been in the room at all, where he deployed hideous language, completely involuntarily, including the N-word, while two black actors were on the stage. I mean, an unthinkable scenario, happily, in the modern world, although, of course, there are political forces keen to take us back to the days when that would have been quite commonplace. Or you'll get calls from people who understand Tourette's and would simply say that, well, you know, obviously the BBC have messed up by not removing it from the edit when they removed somebody saying free Palestine, but they didn't remove somebody using the N-word involuntarily. They removed someone voluntarily saying free Palestine and someone involuntarily using the N-word. And they've apologised. They've explained or claimed, whichever you prefer, depending on your prejudices and preconceptions, that they didn't hear it. Whoever was in charge of the edit simply didn't clock that moment. So either you do a phone-in about literally just dividing the population into people who understand Tourette's and people who don't, or you don't do a phone-in at all. So I didn't do one yesterday. The story's moving a bit. It's changing a bit. It's arguably, from our point of view, getting more interesting. So we may do that in the next hour. Although I'm also drawn to the story about graduate jobs and the increasing likelihood of people who belong to what we call Generation Z never leaving home, never really engaging with the world in a way that their parents and grandparents took completely for granted. Could do both, but of course not today. We've only got time for one today. Back to the state school question and the remarkable acknowledgement that we have loads of conversations about education in this country where the 7% of those who are privately educated probably dominate about 77% of the discourse, which is insane. But the more you think about it, the more it appears to be an inevitable upshot of an entirely deferential post-feudal society. Ian is in Fife, which is, well, as you know, in Scotland. Ian, what would you like to say?
It's quite funny that what has been, how are Labour touting it as a once-in-a-generation, or it's more than a generation, change to how they choose schools, and yet this has been happening in Scotland since the 70s, maybe even longer, that school catchments are divided up between local areas to get school gets an even spread.
So Labour brought it in Scotland then?
I don't know. I just know that this is what I went to in high school. Yeah. In high school I went to, there was kids bused from, I lived in a poor area, and there was kids bused in from more well-off areas.
So there's...
So what you've got in England is basically a circle thrown around a school, don't you?
Yes, exactly that. So we don't even have to cross. We don't even have to cross the English Channel to get the alternative to this. I mean, two things occur to me. The first is there are loads of private schools in Scotland. I think probably proportionately even more per capita than there are in England. So the opportunity for a wealthy parent to access a much higher quality of education is absolutely part of the system in Scotland. But if I'm a relatively wealthy, sharp-elbowed middle-class parent living in, let's say, Anstruther, I have no choice whatsoever over where what state school my child goes to.
That's correct. Your option that you chose, actually, it's funny because we've got a system called the Social Deprivation Index, and so all areas, even within villages and towns, are divided up and they're categorised based on who owns the house, are they both working, what's the council tax like on the house, and health measures, all that sort of stuff. And so you get an index of all these areas, and they're sent over to create a fairly even catchment within a school. But even within areas, you've got more poverty than some areas, so that your Anstruther area that you chose, it's quite a wealthy by and large area, and poverty there isn't as prevalent as further along the coast in a place called Leven, when you're going to have more. So there's going to be slight disparities in that, but by and large, you try to even it all out.
This is great. I mean, first of all, I'm embarrassed I didn't know this, but that's by the by. Second of all, if anybody comes for Bridget Phillipson or Keir Starmer on this, then all they can say is, all they have to say is, well, just have a look at Scotland. It works perfectly. Well, not perfectly, but it works jolly well.
Yeah, I suspect that's where they got the idea.
Could have been. It could easily have been. And it's not just Scotland. It's pretty much every European country, whereby the idea that you can move house to get into a better school probably sounds absolutely ridiculous to people who didn't grow up in England.
Well, that was part of the problem when I taught in England. We had a school, kids on opposite sides of streets going to the other school. Compared to where I taught, I was quite lucky when I graduated. I got a job in a school that it's hard to say this idea it's a good school. I think just because you've got more kids with more middle class parents makes it a good school. You'll find your best teachers in schools with kids where they're more challenging.
Well, it's a more satisfying job, I imagine. Is there no academic selection in Scotland?
No.
None at all. I don't know where in Fife you are, it's quite a big place, but when Gordon Brown went to school in Kirkcaldy, he did some weird scheme, didn't he, where poor kid was put in when he was about 12, he was put in with all the 15 and 16-year-olds because he was so clever. So they used to do a little bit of engineering in the Scottish education system, but I suppose we are going back probably the best part of six or seven decades.
Yeah, you still get engineering. What has gone away is, you know how you used to get, like, carpets and then do mechanics on cars and all that sort of stuff? Mm. It's expensive. So it's the progressive chipping away at the cost of the schooling that's seen all of these things kind of disappear.
And so you just create one massive pot, everybody dips into the same pot, and you take out your allocation of school, irrespective of how wealthy you are or where you live, and everybody benefits. Except perhaps the people who are currently the beneficiaries of an obviously and inherently unfair system. And what defines British politics of the last 200 or possibly even 1,000 years? It is the defence of obviously unfair systems by the people who are on the wrong side of the unfairness. You see it everywhere. Except, I think, and I'll allow that to stand, he says very pompously, in Scotland, where I did say things are very different, both in regard to education and quite often in regard to deference. That's the crucial thing. Get rid of the deference, you get rid of an awful lot of our country's problems.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at midday, Vladimir Zelensky has warned 4 years since the full-scale invasion of Ukraine, Russia remains a major threat. Ukraine's leader says while troops are holding Moscow back, Kyiv's security still hasn't been guaranteed. Mr. Zelensky has told the European Parliament this morning that Vladimir Putin continues to stand in the way of peace.
Putin cannot accept one simple thing, that somewhere people can live differently and enjoy a life that is not the one he prefers. That is why he has been consistently trying to break someone, not just now, not just for 4 years, but throughout his entire time in power.
On the fourth anniversary since Russia's invasion, the UK has announced fresh sanctions against Moscow. Sir Keir Starmer says it's the biggest range of measures since the first year of the conflict. The Prime Minister told his cabinet this morning that Vladimir Putin is the roadblocker to peace.
It is Putin who is standing in the way. Vladimir Zelensky has shown willing, he's taken the lead. It is Putin who is standing in the way. And that's why we must always double down on our support for Ukraine.
Ministers say they still plan to release documents about Peter Mandelson's appointment as ambassador to the United States. That's despite his arrest on suspicion of misconduct in public office. He was released on bail overnight. Lord Mandelson has previously denied any wrongdoing over his links to the late sex offender Jeffrey Epstein. Russell Brand has pleaded not guilty to two further sexual offences, including rape. The comedian and actor has appeared at Southwark Crown Court this morning. The allegations date back to 2009. The Education Secretary, Bridget Phillipson, has told LBC's Call the Cabinet that she will continue to look at the student loan system. There's continued concerns about the amount of debt levels that are building for graduates. Ministers have previously said that the threshold for repayments will be unfrozen in the next few years. And AI could play a bigger role in cutting the backlog in the courts. The Justice Secretary, David Lammy, is laying out plans to modernise the system. A recent review called for the use of AI-generated summaries of witness statements. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 15 at 10,668. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.14. LBC weather, dry and mild with sunny spells for large parts of England going into the afternoon. Some rain continuing for the west of Scotland and Northern Ireland. A high of 15 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
And when teams feel supported, they can achieve anything.
Sorry. Just had even more of my team are off ill.
Have you tried Benenden Health? It's easy to set up. They've got a GP helpline you can book 24/7.
Where were we?
A coffee break, hopefully.
Press play on your people's health with a wide range of healthcare services for less than £16 per employee per month. Search Benenden for business. Fee reviewed periodically. T's and C's apply. Qualifying periods apply for some services. UK only. Visit benenden.co.uk.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Three minutes after 12 is the time. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC, where I turn your attention next to the fallout from the BAFTA award ceremony the other night, now entering its third day. That's the fallout, with a producer stepping down from one of its juries. And Jonte Richardson, an independent producer who has worked on the Emerging Talent Award, has decided to absent himself from any future jury duty at the BAFTAs because, as he says himself, the organisation has, quotes, repeated, he accuses it of, quotes, repeatedly failing to safeguard the dignity of its black guests, members and black creative community. It sometimes involves me wasting my breath when I tell you that we're leaving one element of the conversation out of our deliberations, and that is the BBC's failure to edit the offending segment, which they claim was because editors or producers or whoever does that job simply didn't hear it or notice it. I don't want to have a debate about whether or not we believe them, because we will never know, and therefore, it is not something that can help those of us who want to move towards more clarity on what remains a confused and confusing issue. BAFTA's apology, which I think is important to understanding the issue, for a moment that was heard by everybody watching, certainly by everybody in the room, including the two men on the stage who are black actors, involved a man with Tourette's syndrome, John Davidson, an executive producer of his own life story, the film I Swear, which is based on his life experience, and which, I mean, to me, in the context of the conversation that we're about to have, almost incredibly leaves any viewer with a much greater understanding of that particular condition, Tourette's syndrome, than they would have had before they sat down, and makes it absolutely crystal clear that people with Tourette syndrome have no control, well, two things really. They have no control whatsoever over their physical tics, which can involve what I guess would be described, I think, as spasms. Again, with any conversation about disability, I apologize in advance if I'm not fully sensitive to the correct language and sensibilities. I hope I am. I think I am. I always aim to be, but I acknowledge that I might not know as much as I could, or as much as you do, perhaps. So you can have a physical tic, which could be spasmodic, or a verbal tic, which will often involve, because of the curious, I don't know what you would call it, the curious wiring of a Tourette's brain, it's not just that you will shout out entirely random language. You will often, but not always, shout out things that somewhere inside your brain knows to be profoundly offensive. So we've all either witnessed this in person or been close to witnessing it on a screen or in context. And it is not that you're going to shout out strawberries if you have Tourette syndrome. And if you did, there was a gentleman who used to wander around Kidderminster in my youth who would shout chicken a lot. I presume he had Tourette syndrome. I don't think when I was a child spending time in Kidderminster Town Centre, I knew that word. I knew the word Tourette's. He would also quite often shout out the F word, which obviously all the kids thought was hilarious. And quite often he would tie the two together. If you grew up in that part of Worcestershire and you're of a similar age to me, you probably remember the nickname that he had in the town centre. So it would be, was it Worcester or Kidderminster? I can't remember, actually. But either way, the F word accompanied by chicken would be something that he could not help but shout out very loudly, very regularly, even in, you know, a context where quiet was prevailing. I never went to church with the guy, but you could be on a bus, for example, and you would know if he was on board. That seems to me to be a crucial point of understanding this. There's two bits of the conversation I don't think there's much point us having today. The first, well, maybe that's not true, actually. Maybe some people will need help in understanding how little, zero control that John Davidson has over the content of his verbal tics. And the fact that they are the most offensive words you can imagine is the point. That is what the brain is telling him to do. I opened yesterday's show about special educational needs with an observation that John Davidson, the hero of this story, was beaten by a headmaster for using the most profoundly offensive language. And when he went to the headmaster's study to be beaten, his Tourette syndrome kicked in, if that's the appropriate way to describe it, and he swore again. So the headmaster is saying, I need you to promise that you will never use this kind of language again. And John Davidson says the worst imaginable words to that headmaster in that room where he's about to be beaten for having used bad words. So that's how much control he has over what happens. And that's how society used to treat people with Tourette's, physically and violently beaten by an adult in a position of responsibility for displaying the symptoms of a condition over which he has no more control than an asthmatic or an epileptic person with epilepsy. So the tick in the form of the most profoundly offensive term was heard by many people in the room. Michael B. Jordan and Delroy Lindo, the stars of Sinners, were on stage at the time and I think visibly flinched or noted what had happened. I would say that personally. And the aftermath continues, including the apology from BAFTA. At the BAFTA Film Awards last night, our guests heard very offensive language that carries incomparable trauma and pain for so many. We want to acknowledge the harm this has caused, address what happened, and apologise to all. And then they explain that John Davidson has Tourette syndrome, that the film that he was there for is based on his life experience, and that the tics that he deployed, the involuntary verbal tics, are in no way a reflection of an individual's beliefs and are not intentional. I'd go further, BAFTA didn't, and say that the point is that you say the things that you know are most outrageous and most offensive and most, the things that you would, if you could make a list of all the things you wish you would never say in a tic, you would put these words at the top of that list. Imagine making a list of all the words that you would never ever want to say in company, particularly perhaps in a room where black actors are on the stage. Make a list of all the words you must not say. I must not say it. I must not say it. I must not say it. The words at the top of that list will be the words that people with Tourette syndrome are most likely to tick. That is the point to me of this. During the ceremony, John chose to leave the auditorium and watch the rest of the ceremony from a screen, and we would like to thank him for his dignity and consideration of others on what should have been a night of celebration for him. We take full responsibility for putting our guests in a very difficult situation, and we apologise to all. We will learn from this and keep inclusion at the core of all we do, maintaining our belief in film and storytelling as a critical conduit for compassion and empathy. I don't think there's much point us discussing whether or not the BBC should have edited it, because they acknowledge that they should have done, and they say that they missed it. So if you want, I'm sure other people can conduct phone-ins about whether or not we believe them. It depends how dedicated you are to removing the BBC from a field that is otherwise occupied by billionaires trying to manipulate the news. I don't know, and I don't know how helpful it is to have a conversation about Tourette's itself, because I've seen a lot of people intelligently expressing the view that because this is the word that came out, it must be a word that he somehow associates or wants to deploy in the context of black people, which is just not true. It would be... it would be precisely because it's the word he doesn't want to use in that context that it would bubble to the top of his Tourette syndrome brain. But I am white, spoiler alert, and therefore I feel vaguely uncomfortable, and I may well feel more uncomfortable during the course of this conversation making that point. So I don't think I get today to say that I don't want to have that bit of the conversation. I don't think that's my place. Because there are two things I'll never have, black skin and Tourette syndrome. And this conversation, in many ways, is about people who have one or the other. So I don't know who is going to be best placed to make that distinction, but I think it's important that it's not me. John Davison has expressed himself, as he is prone to do, with poignancy and pathos. He has described himself as being deeply mortified. He also makes the point that he has spent his entire life apologising for moments like this. That's important. He has spent his entire... In fact, the whole point of the film is that people like John Davidson spend their entire lives apologising for moments like this. But, you know, Michael B. Jordan and Delroy Lindo have spent their entire lives being terrorised by the N-word. Whether it is shouted in a room that they're in or not, the knowledge that that sort of racism exists and the knowledge that it is most obviously articulated through hate speech like that is something that I don't live with and they do. And then we come to Jonte Richardson, the film producer who has said he is stepping down as a BAFTA judge over the Academy's handling of the airing of a racial slur at the Film Awards. So he feels that their response has been inadequate. Davison's full quote about being deeply mortified if anyone considers my involuntary tics to be intentional or to carry any meaning. And this is where the debate seems to me to be at its most difficult, in that people who do not have Tourette's are insisting that it must have meaning. I've seen many people try to argue that it must have meaning. He must have used it because he quotes knows, end quotes, that it is the most offensive word he could use in that context, which is true and untrue at the same time. So it seems to me that the only thing BAFTA could have done to avoid this scenario is not to have invited the man whose life story is nominated for a BAFTA to be in the room where the ceremony unfolded. And that's the phone-in. What else could BAFTA have done? 03456060973. I certainly don't feel minded or compelled to argue with Jonte Richardson, the producer who is stepping down as a BAFTA the judge over the Academy's handling of the airing of a racial slur at the Film Awards. But you can't hang an adult content warning around the neck of a guest in either a physical or a metaphorical sense. BAFTA would, almost certainly, should, most definitely, have known. It would be impossible to watch I Swear, which is, for the record, a brilliant and frequently hilarious film. I'd hate you to come away from this saga thinking that it is constantly and endlessly depressing. It would be impossible to watch that film, I believe, and again, correct me if I'm wrong, and not understand that John, John himself would, John Davidson, would be highly, highly likely to say absolutely offensive things very loudly in the room where the ceremony is taking place. It would be impossible, I think, in fact, I'd go that far, to watch that film and not know that this could have happened. Maybe not that word. I don't think that word pops up in the film, but there is, I'm 6 months since I saw it, I'm pretty sure there's racism. I mean, it is a condition that compels people with no control whatsoever to say the most outrageous things that they could possibly say in that context. And that is what he did. So how could BAFTA have behaved better? I don't get this bit of the day three of the saga, but I stress again that I am white and therefore this word does not. So let me just make it clear as well. Don't bother ringing me if you're going to point out that a lot of rappers and black filmmakers employ the N-word in their art, okay? Because I haven't got the energy or the inclination to explain to you why you are absolutely irrelevant to the conversation that we're having. I do it on another day, and I'm sure there are still phone-in hosts at work in this country who will treat that as if it's a valid or interesting point, okay? Entirely irrelevant to all conversations about racism, especially irrelevant to this one. So save yourself tuppence and ring someone else with that. Well, I think you'll find that Tupac uses the N-word all the time. All right, mate. This is about what happened in that room and what should have happened in that room, because I can't currently see what BAFTA was supposed to have done differently, except tell the man whose life story has been filmed and nominated for an award, for various awards, that he shouldn't have been in the room in the first place. I want your thoughts on this. And you may have an even... I think I'm across what happened, but you may... Unlike Prince William, I've seen almost all the films that were nominated for BAFTAs. I just thought that was a prerequisite of being a guest of honour at a film ceremony. Maybe I'm a bit old-fashioned like that, but if you invite me to a film ceremony as a guest of honour, do you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to watch the films. But no, not for Prince William. That's something he's too busy or too distressed to do at the moment. Absolutely pathetic. But that's a conversation for another day, and almost certainly not one that we'll ever have on the radio. What was supposed to happen? Why is this saga now into its third day? Why are people resigning from BAFTA, which does not have a very glorious track record when it comes to the treatment of actors and creators of colour? I mean, I do know that, but I don't know why this story has now reached day three, given that the BBC has acknowledged its error, BAFTA has apologised, John Davidson is mortified, and anybody who knows what Tourette's is knows that this was, by its very definition, an involuntary act. I'm close to saying, give me a ring and say something clever. But I don't know that that would be A, possible, or B, necessary. It may be that we need to examine it from all... Well, anyway, I'll shut up now. The phone lines are open and we'll get stuck into this conversation after this.
LBC.
On a windswept walk in Carmarthen, while someone tries to use your card details to hire a speedboat in Cannes, this is the moment you relax, knowing that Barclays advanced tech has helped to spot the fraud in under a second, and their expert team are on hand to close it down. So you can get back to being windswept. Ooh. Just one of the ways we're protecting our customers 24/7. Search Barclays Fraud Protection. Barclays. Make money work for you.
When the days are cold and dark, we Swedes don't let the weather dampen our spirits. We make it as comfortable as possible. We light candles, settle into the sofa with a fika, sheltered from the world outside. We can't offer you a cozy Swedish log cabin, but we can give you the next best thing. Visit the Volvo new car event between 18th of February and the 11th of March for event offers on selected new cars across the Volvo range. Thoughtfully designed and shaped by the Swedish way of life, giving you that inviting feeling all year round. Order online at volvocars.com or book an appointment at your local Volvo retailer.
Offers vary by model and apply to model year 26. Retail customers only, subject to availability terms apply.
A southern train is a place where you can wind down and catch up. A chance to let conversations flow and plans unfold. And swap doomscrolling for telling stories. Too good for the group chat. Make the journey part of the joy and save 1/3 with off-peak group tickets at southernrailway.com. Terms apply.
This time last year, Hassan was working in sales and spent his evenings gaming.
ticket.
Now, he's working as a prison officer.
You know what's going to happen? It's not worth it. Let's just go in there.
He's tackled cell fires, got through to some of the most challenging prisoners, and helped support their rehabilitation. He's done things he once thought he was never capable of. But he still loves his gaming. An extraordinary job done by someone like you. Search prison jobs now.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
It is 22 minutes after 12, and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC, where we join somewhat belatedly the conversation about the BAFTA Awards ceremony the other night and the handling of, well, a film producer who has chosen to resign from future BAFTA juries describes as the unfortunate Tourette's N-word incident. And he accuses BAFTA of handling the incident in an utterly unforgivable way. I'm keen to find out a little more about that. However, I'd read in full, well, not in full, but another part of his statement. When an organisation like BAFTA, with its own long history of systemic racism, refuses to acknowledge the harm inflicted on both the black and disabled communities and offer an appropriate apology, remaining involved would be tantamount to condoning its behaviour. I don't want to get into the question of whether or not the BBC should have behaved differently. They, and I think pretty much everybody, accepts that they should have done. So that's a moot point. Alan Cumming's apology for the language viewers may have heard is I guess different from apologising to people present for the perceived targeting of the of the language, and therefore BAFTA also apologised unreservedly to the two actors and to all those impacted, adding, "We would like to thank Michael and Delroy for their incredible dignity and professionalism." So, well, anyway, I said I'd shut up and listen to you, so I probably should. Sheba is in Hackney. Sheba, what would you like to say?
Hi, James. I think that the BAFTAs have embarrassed themselves internationally. That's why it's going on so long.
Yes.
You know, on social media, the number of African Americans I've seen posting about this is not stopping.
No, absolutely not.
What I feel that they did wrong is, in by way of inclusivity, there should have been a meeting before to say, what do we do if this happens? If he blurts out something on ground of ethnicity or gender or whatever, because they always knew it could happen. So the quality of the apologies are so ropey, and they just didn't prepare themselves for the eventuality of this outcome.
What would good preparation have been?
Well, to know that, to understand his triggers. And can I just say before I go further?
It doesn't really have triggers as such. It could happen, yeah, in any context. So what would the preparation have been? What do you think? Because we can say we should have done something, but what would that something have looked like?
Well, if they know that he said what he said to the Queen, then they know what could possibly happen.
Yes.
So in case he says something that we have to apologise for, how do we do it? When do we do it? And just be very strategic.
And what was wrong with the way? What was wrong with the way they did apologise?
Because I think at the end you could see when Alan Cummings came on and said, you know, you could see it was a crisis management moment. Nobody dies, so let's get. Oh, and if the audience has been offended, not the two African American men,
yeah,
but the audience. So if they had taken their time and worked it out, they would have known that they should address these two titans who were in the audience or who were offended by this word. But can I just say also, James?
But they've done that now. They've apologised unreservedly.
Yes.
Now,
yes.
Specifically to Michael,
absolutely,
B. Jordan and Delroy Lindo. So it's a planning error.
That's what I'm trying to say. But James, may I also say,
of course,
that it's very unlikely that if somebody is a racist, they would say this. Because for a racist, the N-word is not an intrusive thought. So I just want to...
Yes, that's
understand
a nice word. Well, I don't know. I don't think either of us... Well, maybe you are. But, I mean, the people with Tourette's can shout absolutely inconsequential words for no reason whatsoever.
Yes.
And they can also shout profoundly offensive words.
Right. But what I'm trying to say is that they're trying to manage intrusive thoughts. That,
yes,
would not be an intrusive thought for a racist because that's part of their thought process. So for people saying that that he's a racist, I find that so sad.
Yes,
and
I
so
do
unfortunate
too. I do
and so
too.
That they've missed.
Well, I don't want to split this particular hair. I don't know that it can be said, stated with full certainty, that no racist with Tourette's would never do this. But anyone who knows anything about John's story knows that certainly is not something that he suffers
absolutely.
From.
I watched his film last night.
You did,
and I will stand by that.
Yeah, I think, and you're right. I've seen some of the chatter online. Chatter sounds as if I'm trivialising it. I've seen some of the positions adopted online, and that argument is perhaps the most depressing. The idea that it proves he's racist somehow because he used a word that is so obviously associated with it ignores the most basic lesson of the film, which is that there is absolutely no control over the offence. I mean, he said, as you just reminded us, some people listening may not know, he shouted "Bleep the Queen" when he was receiving his MBE.
Exactly, and I think that's very relevant.
So that would involve him going to get an MBE while simultaneously hating the Queen, because he wouldn't have shouted that out even with his tics if he didn't actually hate the Queen while he's there to correct the proudest day of his life to collect a medal from the Queen. It's bonkers, isn't it?
It really is, and I just think that the bastards didn't prepare themselves well.
Yeah, okay, because let me accept that. I'm not going to argue with that in a million years, but that doesn't really explain why it's still on alive, as it were. I think it's more that the controversy continues because of the people you've just described as not really understanding what's going on and misunderstanding the relationship between Tourette's and offensive language.
Yeah, but also, let's not forget the power of the N-word. The
of course,
power of the N-word
of
and how it hit those two actors
yeah.
at the top of their game. So, you know, when you say one, you have to say two. So there was a possibility that he could say that. Prepare yourself.
What's the worst thing that can happen? Right, everyone gather
exactly.
around, sitting here in the room. What's the worst thing that could happen? Wouldn't
exactly.
have been that. Anyone who's seen the film would not have leapt up in shock at the suggestion that he might shout out the N-word when black actors are on the stage.
James, can I also say,
yeah.
if that was to British actors, it would have died down a lot quicker. I just want to leave you with that.
Okay. Are you sure? You don't want to allow me one little question?
Okay. Go on then.
Why?
Only because it's you.
Why? Why would it have died down much? Because
it's the international backlash. The British are very good at brushing over the N-word.
Yeah.
They're very good. The African-Americans and America, they don't play with that. But we...
I think you're right. I think you're
yeah.
right. And you know, it's not baked into our consciousness in the same way that it is in the United States as well, I think. It's a hideous and offensive word, but you don't routinely encounter people in the United Kingdom, or at least until relatively recently, who would make it clear publicly that they wanted to be able to use it and were supremely comfortable doing so. After Donald Trump's first election, there were reports of it returning to high schools and returning to conversation right across the country. Sheba, thank you. Brilliantly done. Thank you for allowing me that little cheeky supplementary question at the end. Here's Dominic Ellis with your headlines.
Vladimir Zelensky has warned that 4 years since the full-scale invasion of Ukraine, Russia remains a major threat. Ukraine's leader says while troops are holding back Moscow, Kyiv's security hasn't been guaranteed. Ministers say they still plan to release documents about Lord Mandelson's appointment as ambassador to the United States. That's despite his arrest on suspicion of misconduct in public office. He was released on bail last night. And the Education Secretary, Bridget Phillipson, has told LBC's Call the Cabinet that she's aware the anger the student loan system is causing. There's growing concerns over repayment costs. LBC weather dry and mild with sunny spells for large parts of England. Some rain continuing for western Scotland and northern Ireland. A high of 15 degrees.
LBC.
When the days are cold and dark, we Swedes don't let the weather dampen our spirits. We make it as comfortable as possible. We light candles, settle into the sofa with a fika, sheltered from the world outside. We can't offer you a cozy Swedish log cabin, but we can give you the next best thing. Visit the Volvo new car event between 18th of February and the 11th of March for event offers on selected new cars across the Volvo range. Thoughtfully designed and shaped by the Swedish way of life, giving you that inviting feeling all year round.
Order online at volvocars.com or book an appointment at your local Volvo retailer.
Offers vary by model and apply to model year 26. Retail customers only. Subject to availability terms apply.
If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, what you thought you were getting may not be what you ended up with. From unexpected site fee increases, running costs, a huge depreciation in value, many owners feel they've been missold. If you think this might be you, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive the compensation you're entitled to. Text ASSIST to 78900 to find out more. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Across the country, thousands of drivers are feeling electric about switching to an EV, and here's why. They can go from London to Sheffield on a single charge that could cost around a fiver. They're ecstatic about that and the exhilarating feeling behind the wheel. Plus, with charging made simple at home, they're always ready for the drive ahead. I can see why they're into it. Switch to an EV and get that electric feeling. Costs and range dependent on tariffs, model and driving habits. For full details, visit gov.uk/clean energy.
It's time to scale up that fishmonger business, and with free day-to-day online banking from Virgin Money, you'll be a big fish in no time. Now that's a real catch of the day. Open Virgin Money's M account for business now. UK excludes NI, Channel Islands and Isle of Man. 18 plus fees apply for chaps and international payments. Terms and exclusions apply. Backed by the current account switch service. Virgin Money is a trading name of Clydesdale Bank PLC.
Get extra support with Immunace multivitamins. With vitamin D, zinc and selenium, which contribute to the normal function of the immune system. Immunace from Vitabiotics, the UK's number one vitamin company. Verification at Vitabiotics.com. From Boots, Pharmacies and Vitabiotics.com.
This is LBC. Message James O'Brien on WhatsApp now on 0345 60 60973.
It is 33 minutes after 12. I don't think I Swear is nominated for any Oscars. So, you know, not making light of the situation, the importance of lessons being learned is not rendered even more urgent by the fact that the Oscar ceremony is around the corner, and had I Swear being nominated for that, then as both the man whose life story is told in the film and as an executive producer of the film, John Davidson's potentially problematic presence, I don't think is on the horizon. So a man with Tourette's used the worst imaginable word while two black superstars were on the stage at an award ceremony for which all three of them had films nominated. And, I mean, you may struggle to improve upon what Sheba has told us, particularly that last point about why in Britain this would have gone away, it would have been glossed over. You'd have had people doing the thing I told you not to bother ringing me to do, saying, well, I think you'll find that, NWA were a very popular beat combo for many years. So why do black people get upon their high horse about this word when they use it themselves? And I've said before, I'll say it again, I haven't got the energy or the inclination to explain something to you that you could find out for yourself in 5 seconds flat. Unfortunately, Daily Mail columnists are very much in that category, so they would almost certainly have contributed to the speed with which it would have disappeared from public discourse if it wasn't for the huge response transatlantically, the huge outrage in America. But, and I think I'm comfortable saying this, but as ever, if I shouldn't, then give me a ring and tell me why, a lot of that outrage displays a deep ignorance of Tourette syndrome, which Sheba again rather brilliantly highlighted. And that is why I remain a little... Well, anyway, on with the call. Sarah's in Tottenham. Sarah, what would you like to say?
Hi.
Hello.
Hi, James. Long-term listener and fan.
Thank you.
I'm very emotional, actually. I have Tourette's.
Okay.
And the first thing I want to say is that wasn't a safe space for anybody.
No.
John Davidson, and I know you agree, I love what you said. He should have been the most important person, guest, entity to be on that show more than anything else that had happened. And that's where they should have started from. What does John Davidson need to be safe? And do you know who's an expert on it? He is.
Yeah.
Talk to John Davidson. Say, what do you need? What happened was absolutely inevitable. It hurt anybody listening. It hurt the actors. It hurt John Davidson. It was a complete shambles, and it was preventable. So preventable. And I can't imagine, what John Davison's going through, but it should have been his
tell me.
Night.
Tell me. Give me an idea of what he might be doing.
I mean, I don't swear, but no. I've had Tourette's in my life, and I mean, I don't even know where to start. All through school, all through everything, I've had people emanate. I used to have a head tick, which I actually got a headache from doing it so much. I used to have little screams I did. Now it's it's sort of clearing my throat.
Yes.
And if I'm a counsellor now, a therapist, and if I've been to conferences, and you'd imagine that they're a nice place, but when it's quiet, I'll clear my throat quite a lot. And it's annoying. I hate it. I've had a therapist come up to me and tell me how he would clear his throat. Even when I said I've got Tourette's, they just kept explaining to me.
Oh.
And I went home and cried.
Yes.
So
the problem here is, as you know, I make this as safe a space for you as I can in the course of this.
I was clearing my throat a lot before I came on, and then I was like, oh no, it's all right. This is what I'm talking about. Actually, people would probably love to hear it. So they're like, oh, look, there it is.
Well, who knows? People are strange, aren't they? But the problem here is that if you and I were to, or you in particular, were to seek to explain to somebody what his condition is, then it well, certainly if I did it, not so much if you did it, they could easily feel that I was somehow invalidating or ignoring their reaction to racism in general, to that
but
word in all...
True.
Yes, exactly.
And I think you said that yesterday. Two things could be true.
I listen to you.
It can be completely offensive. I mean, as you say, it's the most offensive thing one can think of. I used to have a thing where I'm about to tell the world I pulled my skirt up when I was a teenager.
Yes.
And I didn't want to expose myself. Boy, did I not want to be even weirder than I was.
Yeah.
But I did it. And it's amazing what you can get away with in plain sight of people if you just quickly do it.
Yeah.
It's really important.
I'll have to take your word for that.
But it was, you said a spasm. I mean, that's quite a good way of... talking about it. I was at a Tourette's conference when somebody said it's like wanting to blink, which chimes quite well as well.
Yes.
It's quite hard to
try not to. Try not to do it.
Yeah.
Is there a relationship for some people with Tourette's? I don't think it's true of all of them. Between that desire not to do, so the worst thing I could do in this circumstance somehow becomes the thing I'm most likely
absolutely.
To happen to
and,
me.
I mean, can you imagine? If I am tired, excited, stressed, any of those things, if I'm heightened, it's going to happen more.
Right.
He should have been a king. He was a king. It was his night, you know, with all those A-listers. It would have been very exciting. It was inevitable. And even if he didn't say the worst word that's ever been said, he could have still been disruptive.
Of course. I mean, he shouted bleep the Queen at his MBE ceremony. So, I mean, that's two calls, and we'll have time for some more, but I'm glad these have been long calls, because coming at it with fairness and understanding from different angles. But we haven't done enough to care for the men who were on the stage. But crucially, they didn't do enough to care for the man who was in the audience. The man whose story is being told on the stage. And when you consider the power of that story, it becomes all the more remarkable that... I mean, you could never guarantee that he wouldn't have tics, could you, in any situation? But you could... do more to help him not, I think. Is that right?
Are you talking to me?
Well, who else am I going to be talking to?
Oh, sorry, I didn't know I was still on.
So I was going off on one of my things, didn't you, Sarah?
I thought you were getting ready for the next one.
But they could, no, I'm really interested in what you've got to say. They could have done more to help him, but there would never be any guarantees, would there? There'd never be any guarantees.
Well, there could have been. I mean, if he ended up watching it from a screen, that's fine. I mean, I don't... It would have been up to him and everybody to work together. And there's Tourette's experts that you can call. I think there's more in America, actually, the Tourette's Association.
Really?
And you can ask advice from experts. The world's full of experts.
We
should listen to experts.
Yeah.
He's definitely not the first person to ever be in a public situation like that. What is needed?
Beautifully,
I mean, it could have been away from the microphone, for one.
Yeah, oh, yeah, that's true. I mean, the microphone's there to pick up applause and things like that, but he could, I don't know. I mean, again, the discrimination... flag goes up a little bit if he's stuck in a box at the back of the room or something like that.
It would be working with him.
Yeah, working with him. You're so, obviously right. You're obviously right. Dave in Kent has sent in a joke, and I don't know whether or not, you tell me whether you think this is appropriate or not, and I mean this in a genuine sense of inquiry.
Okay.
So Dave just says, it's a shame we can't get John in the audience for Donald Trump's State of the Union address later tonight.
I mean, we've all heard stuff like
variations
that.
On that.
It's very droll.
But it doesn't help.
I mean, I don't know. You have to ask John if he thinks that's funny.
I'd quite like to, actually.
Yeah, I'd like to hear from John.
We were talking to him about coming on Full Disclosure a few months ago. I'm not quite sure what happened to that. I may resurrect the... resurrect the invitation. Thank you. That was really helpful. Really, really helpful. And a reminder that the story is going to look different from wherever you are sitting. And if you are sitting there as a black woman, like our first caller, it is a very different story from if you're sitting there as a woman with Tourette's, like Sarah. And a white bloke who is neither black nor has Tourette's should probably just keep his beak out. 12:42 is the time. Craig is in Glasgow. Craig, what would you like to say?
Hi, James. Love the show. I just wanted to call up. I just think the lack of foresight from BAFTA is really shocking.
Yeah. I'm coming round. But that is really crystallising, isn't it, that conclusion?
Yeah, and you would think as well, as you said, about, I believe it's Prince William, that you would think a prerequisite of being a guest of honour or even indeed planning or being part of committees of the Academy.
It's not the most important element of this conversation, but before I became fully aware of this, because I didn't watch the ceremony live, that was the thing that had really got up my nose, was he had the arrogance to turn up and say, oh no, I haven't seen that one. Oh, I haven't seen that one. Oh, I think I saw that one. Oh, I didn't see that. Yeah. Or fell asleep during that one. Went to the loo during that. But anyway, that's not the key element. That BAFTA really should have been fully across the content of every film in the lineup.
Exactly. And I think as well, John's story has been covered in documentaries as far back as like 1989, 2008. And this film is a fantastic film. And the whole point of it is obviously to bring awareness to Tourette's and everything. I mean, you have that Tourette's is such a widely known thing now. You even have someone as famous and popular as Lewis Capaldi with, you know, his physical tics.
So yes, exactly.
And I just think, like, the lack of foresight to be able to see this happen, and they should have given John more consideration and maybe even had a conversation with him. What are you comfortable with?
Yeah.
Is there anything we can do, you know?
I mean, anybody with any disability will know that they are not asked enough about. Because some people might think they're doing the right thing by not asking. I don't want to draw attention to your disability, so I'm not going to ask you what special treatment or what treatment you may want or you may benefit from, because then I might be doing something that annoys you by drawing attention to your disability.
Yeah, I can see why people would think that, but also I think it's more considerate, in my opinion, to have been speaking to him. Obviously, it would have avoided this, because the person who feels the most mortified is also John, you know, like, he's been his whole life.
Well,
that was, in
many ways, among the most powerful parts of this conversation was him just casually throwing into his apology the fact that he's been making this apology for his entire life, variations of this apology for his entire life.
Mm-hmm. And I think as well, the thing that won't help how he's feeling after the fallout of all this is people's sort of, I know ignorance is quite a strong word, but people, even actors as famous as Jamie Foxx,
yeah,
jumping onto X and saying, oh no, he definitely meant that.
That's really unhelpful. But it's not done with malice. It's just done from a place of incomprehension, I think, is a nicer word to use than ignorance. Equally ignorant is to claim that no offence should have been taken, because it's the word that causes the offence, of course, not just the person shouting it. If we had more time, thank you, Craig. I'm fascinated by that thing that... the idea that it would have happened very differently had they been British actors. And Craig reminds us that some very, very big American stars have joined into the conversation with extremely cutting... I don't know, and I'm reluctant really to speculate too much on this, but the word clearly has a different currency in the United States, because it was never successfully excised from public discourse in the way that it was here. You go back to the 1950s or the 60s when you had those Conservative Party posters put up saying, if you want an N-word for a neighbour, vote Labour. And that feels like a milestone from which we travelled very, very far. Of course, the man that founded UKIP, Professor Alan Sked, has repeatedly explained that Nigel Farage used to use the word routinely and all the time and with complete contempt. But Farage has probably denied that in the same way that he denies making anti-Semitic comments to his Jewish schoolmates or gas chamber comments to his Jewish schoolmates when he was 18. But the I think that the British relationship with the word is different from the American one in a largely good way. But I could be wrong, because the examples I have in the back of my mind would involve the murder of Stephen Lawrence and the way that his murderers used the word when they were pursuing him down the streets of Eltham, or that 1950s, 60s political advert. And that's why I'd use the word incomprehension to describe the intervention of some prominent black Americans rather than words like ignorance, because someone is in pain. You probably, in most circumstances, should avoid telling them that they shouldn't be. It's 12:47.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Sheila Fogarty.
If Shamima Begum came back to the UK on a channel crossing, what should happen? Should race ever come into a decision on the threat from someone's psychosis? And after the BAFTA, the crisis.
Sheila Fogarty at 1. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
This is 40-year-old Kathy, mother of two and self-confessed telly addict.
Daddy? Oh, look at you. That's brilliant. Well done.
This is also Kathy, working as part of a team to keep things calm at her local prison. And helping someone's son write his first letter home in 8 months.
Well done. You should be really proud.
Thank you, miss.
An extraordinary job done by someone like you. Search prison jobs now.
We asked patients at Great Ormond Street Hospital what makes someone special.
They can make me laugh lots and lots and lots and lots.
They have to write arts and crafts.
Their favourite food is chocolate cake.
They might be a magician, so they can magically make me better.
They will be kind.
Does that sound like you? Be someone special and leave a gift in your will to Gosh Charity. Search Gosh Legacy for your Gifts in Wills guide.
Thank you.
With over 50 years' experience at Fidelity, we believe there's a difference between investing and being invested. Investing is having access to guidance, tools, and expert insights. Being invested means feeling confident about your future. Investing is choosing from a wealth of investment options. Being invested means focusing on your long-term goals. For ISAs, pensions or advice, be truly invested with Fidelity. Go to fidelity.co.uk. Your capital is at risk. Terms apply.
When you're smiling, the whole world smiles with you.
Life feels better with a smile. Banning Dental Group Clinics. Modern, comfortable and affordable dentistry for all. See online for our price match promise. Keep on smiling.
Keep on smiling. Keep on smiling. And the whole world smiles with you.
Banningdental.co.uk.
Music, news, celebrities, socials, entertainment, podcasts, video. The world of media and entertainment is a world we all turn to every second that we can. And university isn't for everyone. So, if you're leaving school, take a look at joining Global Academy in year 14 to take a unique course in creative enterprise and kickstart your media career. Get industry experience, develop your entrepreneurial skills, and it's free. Apply now at globalacademy.com.
Leading Britain's conversation, LBC, with James O'Brien.
10:50 is the time. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC, where the third day of controversy surrounding unfortunate Tourette's N-word incident at the BAFTA Awards on Sunday night, where we're now well into it. Jonte Richardson, a filmmaker, has said he's stepping down as a judge because, and I quote, "I cannot and will not contribute my time, energy and expertise to an organisation that has repeatedly failed to safeguard the dignity of its black guests, members and the black creative community." Our caller Sarah, who has Tourette's syndrome, albeit that it manifests rather differently from from Johns, from the man upon whom the film I Swear is based, she pointed out that BAFTA had also failed to properly care for him, for John Davidson, and put him in a situation that she said very powerfully was a million miles away from being a safe space. So I think we can agree that the BBC have had a nightmare, albeit that they say the reason it wasn't edited out was because they missed it. Some of the Capital Letters Brigade are in my inbox insisting that the reason why this is being turned into a huge story is to distract attention away from the fact that one recipient of an award did indeed intone Free Palestine at the ceremony, and that was removed as well. You'd have to ask them why. All political commentary is discouraged at these kind of events, but some political commentary seems to be more discouraged than others. I'm more than happy to repeat that that happened again and again and again and again. The idea that I'm not is obviously absurd. I've said it twice, and now I'll say it again. One award winner shouted Free Palestine at the end of his reception speech, and the BBC elected to remove that from the footage that was later broadcast. They say that they missed this. That is why it was not broadcast. There's a big difference. To be fair to whoever's editing it, I imagine that they're concentrating on what is being said on the stage rather than what is being shouted from the middle of the audience. That's not an excuse, that's an explanation of what's gone on. I can't force you to believe or disbelieve their account of events, but that is their account of events. And then the question of what BAFTA should have done differently becomes pretty close to getting answered by the word, well, everything. Everything. Coy's in Dartford. Coy, what made you pick up the phone?
Hi, James. I think my main issue with what happened is just the lack of almost an apology after. Like, okay, we understand he has Tourette's. There's nothing he can do about that. That's not the issue. That's fine. But it was just the fact that nothing was said after it. It wasn't, there was no apology from anybody. And it feels like people are just being like, well, it is what it is. And that was my main thing. I think that could have at least just been like, oh, I'm so sorry.
You mean there was an absent, what was absent was the full acknowledgement of how awful it was?
Yes. I think that.
And that creates the idea that people didn't think it was that awful.
I think, I wouldn't say that, but I think it's like almost being like swept under the rug because we understand the current political climate of things and thing like, and it just feel like it could just been a sorry, like it, and the fact that that didn't happen just makes it a bit bigger than, as if it was almost not intentional.
So he apologised, Alan Cumming apologised for language that viewers may have heard. He didn't.
Yeah.
You see, this is the problem, and I hope this doesn't, I mean, this is a bit hair-splitting, because your point is really powerful, and I'm certainly not arguing with it, but if this was a philosophy seminar rather than a radio phone-in, if the word is uttered, you can't expect him to apologise, John Davidson to apologise, any more than you'd expect Christopher Reeve to apologise for being in a wheelchair when he turns up at the BAFTAs. Neither of them have any control over those two conditions, over their respective disabilities. So BAFTA are apologising for the offence caused by a word that was uttered with no attendant offence.
I think, again, it's just a matter of intent versus impact. No one's saying he intended to hurt anyone, but because of the nature of the word, it wasn't just like he dropped an F-bomb. That would have been okay, we understood. But because it's a slur, it's a racial slur that has so much history and weight behind it on such a big stage and a celebratory event, especially at the actors it was directed to, not directed to, but at that time, it kind of just, it's like, oh my goodness.
Intent versus it, that's absolutely brilliant. Intent versus impact. That cuts to the absolute heart of this entire conversation. So you can apologise for the impact without misrepresenting or indeed apologising for the intent, because there wasn't any.
Yeah, because I think I've kind of seen the discourse and I understand that. Like, he didn't mean it, that's fair. Mm. But just, I'm so sorry. Like, I didn't mean it, but it just, that kind of thing, it would have really...
Well, he's done that. He has done that. And he wouldn't have had the opportunity to do it on the night. He can only do that subsequently because of the nature both of the ceremony and of his condition. But for BAFTA should be apologising for the impact of it because it was picked up in the room. But he's apologised profusely. And he also said this thing, Coy, that I found very moving. He pointed out he's been issuing variations of this apology for pretty much all of his life.
Yeah. I think maybe that wasn't what I've seen, but if that is true, I think Bob Bastard definitely should have, because I know it wasn't cut out.
In the room. In the room. I mean, but then again, if Alan Cumming is apologising for it, then they know enough about it to apologise for the impact, not just for the inclusion. And also, if Alan Cumming is apologising for it, then how could they not have, how could they then argue?
Yeah.
That they noticed, maybe he didn't know exactly what the language was at that point, so he's issuing an apology for any language that viewers may have heard. Coy, that was brilliant. I mean, the tension, the distinction between intent and impact seems to me, at least, to cut, and presumably to Coy as well, to cut to the absolute heart of this conversation. Anne-Marie is in Barnet. Anne-Marie, what would you like to say?
Hello, James. Thank you for taking my call.
You're most welcome.
Thank you. Apologies, because I understand that, you know, some of what I'm going to say may have been covered, but I just wanted to expand on something that you had suggested as to whether or not it would have been a good idea to probably ask that he be excused at that point where those actors were going to be. And I'll explain as to why I say this.
Quite short of time. I just see this here. She's looking quite ready for action. Go on.
So because they knew that he's got no control over what he could possibly say, and like you've stated, what could be the worst possibly thing that he could say, i.e. to utter the N-word. And I think for that reason, they could have had that conversation with him to say, you know, would you feel comfortable stepping aside, given that we are aware that, you know, you have no control over what you were going to say, and then see what he says. And if he says, no, well, no, because I think this will probably bring more attention, or maybe to educate people a bit more. But then they could say to him, well, think of the backlash that you could have and how uncomfortable this is going to make you feel, or as the previous caller says, the impact this could have on those two
That's
actors
tricky, isn't
and
it?
Indeed yourself. And I think maybe someone should
so you're offering
that
him
dialogue
the
with him.
You're offering him the opportunity to be segregated.
Possibly.
On account of his disability.
Yes. Precisely, but Whoa. Not for the entirety
what
of
about
it
the
all.
Queen? I mean, what about when he went to get his MBE? Should he have been excluded from that room as well because of what he indeed did shout about the Queen?
But I think maybe they'd had that conversation with the Queen to say, you know, Your Majesty, there's a distinct possibility that this gentleman could have said something which he does not intend on saying or to cause any, but the impact obviously could be quite, you know, catastrophic, not wanting
well,
you know,
Alan Cumming did that. Word. Alan Cumming at the very top of the ceremony said that there was someone in the room with Tourette's and that a big outburst might be expected. So in some ways I disagree with you about John Davidson. I don't think that you do respond to people's disabilities by offering them an opportunity to exclude themselves from company. But what you do is make sure everybody on the stage knows what Alan Cumming tried to say. But everybody on the stage knows there's somebody in the room who could well involuntarily shout the most offensive thing you've ever heard from an awards stage. Please be aware that it would not be done with any intent, and that it could well happen in the course of the evening's proceedings. And we come back to that apology. I can only add that I am and always have been deeply mortified if anyone considers my involuntary tics to be intentional or to carry any meaning. Wow. It is coming up to 1 o'clock. Thank you for that. Absolutely extraordinary conversation. And I think I was probably the least qualified person to contribute to it, not for the first time. If you missed any of the show, you can listen back on Global Player. Do download it or the official LBC app for free from your app store now. Tom Swarbrick will be with you at 4 on LBC. But now it's time for Sheila Fogarty.
Thank you very much indeed, James. I'm going to pick up that story at 2, actually. I'll be joined by the comedian Ava Vidal, who's written a really revealing piece about it, and just interesting piece about it in the I paper. So she'll join me at 2. At 3, tears and questions at the inquiry into the Nottingham killings back in 2023. Should race ever be a consideration in mental health threat management, as was the case in this instance? First up after the news, if Shamima Begum came back on a channel crossing, as some reports, not confirmed, suggest that she might. What should flow from that? What should happen next? We'll have updates on Peter Mandelson's release on bail and a story about the first British baby born from a transplanted womb, no less.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 1 o'clock, Keir Starmer has hit out at Vladimir Putin for blocking the path to peace on the fourth anniversary of his invasion of Ukraine. The Prime Minister has promised to back Kyiv for as long as it takes during an address to Cabinet. The Kremlin says it hasn't achieved its goals yet. NATO chief Mark Rutte says allies need to step up weapons deliveries to Kyiv.
Because a promise of help does not end a war. Ukraine needs ammunition today and every day until the bloodshed stops.
Banks, energy companies and weapons manufacturers have been targeted in fresh UK sanctions against Moscow. Ministers say they still plan to release documents about Peter Mandelson's appointment as ambassador to the US. That's despite his arrest on suspicion of misconduct in public office and release on bail overnight. Cabinet Minister Bridget Phillipson has told LBC the files will still come out.
We hope to be able to publish the first tranche of documents in the start of March. That's the commitment that we've given. I imagine, given events in recent days, we will need to check with the police that nothing we intend to publish would compromise their investigation.
Lord Mandelson's previously denied any wrongdoing over his links to the late paedophile Jeffrey Epstein. Russell Brand has denied two further sexual offences, including rape. The comedian and actor previously denied two counts of rape, one of indecent assault and two counts of sexual assault. The 50-year-old is due to go on trial in June. A filmmaker has said he's stepping down as a BAFTA judge over the Academy's handling of the airing of a racial slur at the ceremony. It was shouted by a Tourette's campaigner while actors Michael B. Jordan and Delroy Lindo were on stage. Jonty Richardson says the handling of the incident was utterly unforgivable. And Ireland and Scotland have been drawn with hosts England in the first stage of cricket's Women's T20 World Cup this summer. Group 2 also includes New Zealand, Sri Lanka and the West Indies. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 11 points at 10,673. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.14. LBC weather, dry with sunny spells in southern and central parts, cloudier elsewhere in the UK with a few spots of drizzle and rain in the far northwest of Scotland, a mild and breezy day, a high of 15 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Amelia Cox.
What's the secret to feeling young? Cryo chambers? Vampire facials? Really? The real secret to feeling young? Simply living young. And right now you can roll young with £500 off across the SEAT range on top of existing offers, including the fun new SEAT Ibiza and Arona. But this offer won't last forever. Order by the 31st of March. SEAT. Rolling young. UK retail customers excluding contract hire. 18 plus. Order by 31st of March and collect by 30th of June. Subject to availability. T's and C's apply.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Sheila Fogarty.
Hello, good afternoon to you. As I said just before I came on air, before one, we are going to look at that BAFTA story in more detail as well a little later in the programme. I'll be joined at two by the comedian Ava Vidal, who's written for the I paper about it. But I want to start with a story connected to Shamima Begum. I almost don't even need to explain who she is, but just for those who may have forgotten, Shamima Begum, at the age of 15, left London along with two friends and joined Islamic State. She is now, along with thousands probably of other women and children, in a camp in which called Al Roj, in which she can't leave. She can't leave it. She's got no citizenship here in the UK anymore. That was revoked in 2019. And in the Express today, there's a report from the journalist Andrew Drury claiming that there are fairly advanced plans between Shamima and a friend of hers to get back to the UK, get her back to the UK, up to and potentially including people smugglers and ending up on the Channel. Now, this hasn't been confirmed at all, but whether it is a real plan or not, the whole thing, I think, begs questions that we as a country, I don't think, have fully answered yet. So I wonder what you think our response should be if Shamima Begum were to get herself either here to the UK one way or another, or to a country neighbouring where she is now, where there was a British consul or a British embassy that she could go to. What should flow from that? She currently has no British citizenship, but she was a British schoolgirl when all of this happened.
she did have British citizenship then, and I don't think we've fully decided as a nation what we think should happen to Shamima Begum. Officially, yes, but as a population, I'm not so sure. 0345-6060973, the number you can text, 84850. I'm joined by Josh Baker, journalist, filmmaker and creator of the I'm Not a Monster podcast. It's about Shamima Begum, the Shamima Begum story. Josh, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon. Nice to be with you.
So we know that this is what the journalist Andrew Drury is reporting, but it's far from confirmed. And yet, would you agree with me that it begs all of the questions that remain unanswered about Shamima Begum?
Completely. I think just one thing to say, these camps where Shamima and others like her are held, the methods of communication out are phones that are universally shared. And so what I am hearing in this article and in other places doesn't really tally with what I've heard in conversations with Shamima myself. I think that's worth saying. But I think you're right, and it's in a sensible assertion that Shamima's story really touches upon a much bigger issue of what is it that we do with our citizens or former citizens who either were trafficked or chose to join the so-called Islamic State group. And what the sort of situation has been for years is leaving them in these sort of tents at the edge of the desert. You have to remember when the so-called caliphate fell in 2019, tens of thousands of them emerged from the ashes. Shamima Begum was just one of them. And they've been held in these temporary facilities ever since. However, after the fall of Assad, the sort of geopolitics on the ground in Syria started to shift. And that sort of methodology of holding them has come into question. And in recent weeks, there have been escapes. There have been mass transfers of some to Iraq. And now the situation that was a comfortable status quo has started to shift.
That's really interesting, because let's go back to that point you made about the fall of Assad and those big shifts in Syria. For people who might not know, the Al-Roj camp is in the northeast of Syria. And where there have been transfers or where there have been escapes, is it your understanding that, well, the transfer would be a transfer, but is it your understanding that some of those escapes might well have been facilitated by individuals because of the shift in power on the ground?
Absolutely. So, I mean, there's a couple of places. These camps were basically historically held and controlled by a sort of Kurdish-led militia known as the SDF, who'd very much carved out their sort of own section of Syria. Now, with the change of government, Damascus is in essence trying to wrestle back control of that. And that's at times created certain power vacuums. So there was a camp called Al-Hol, which is relatively near Al-Roj, not that close, but relatively. And during the sort of fighting over that, there were a number of people that escaped. You know, some reports suggest thousands. It's not exactly clear how many. It could be hundreds, could be much less. And before all of that, anyway, these camps have long been an insecure environment. So for years, there have been escapes from these camps. Perhaps most notably as well, the very woman who convinced Shamima Begum to go to Syria by the name of Sharmina Begum, no relation, a school friend of hers that sort of went first and texted her and sort of laid the groundwork, if you will. She was also